It's 2016, and if you've been asleep since the last episode of Radio Free Nintendo came out, you probably died. Welcome to Radio Free Nintendo episode, I forgot what episode number we're on because it has been a long time.
458?
Yeah.
I'm your host.
No, nobody else has, James, don't worry about it.
It's in the email. I just have the email in front of me. Mm-hmm.
Don't worry, we got you.
I'm running a show, John. I don't have time to check my emails.
Fair enough.
I'm your host, James Jones. With me today, the impetuous Mr. John Lindemann.
Yeah, this is the year of fair enough.
The year of fair... fair enough on that. Our editor, Mr. Guillaume Veillette.
Yeah, the year of agreeable disagreement.
That would the only part that would change there is the agreeable part.
Well, yeah, I don't see that. That's not the trend line I'm seeing in culture. I have to be honest.
Oh, and the aware of the reality in which we all exist, Mr. Greg Leahy.
Painfully aware.
So I know we had announced we were going to take an episode off before we went to the break, and then we ended up taking out two. If you missed, you know, we went on Twitter and talked about it a little bit. I apologize, we weren't, you know, better prepared for that. It's just incredibly difficult to schedule an episode during the holidays, especially when, you know, the major holidays are falling on our recording day and our backup recording day, essentially.
Yeah, plus, you know, in some cases, some of us just can't give a fuck.
Yeah, that's fair. No, that's totally fair. And editing is a pain in the ass on holiday weekends, and it's just, there was too much going on. And to be honest, if you look at, you know, the activity on the show and look at, you know, listens, people weren't working that week. Largely, so people weren't listening to podcasts.
Right.
So there is a certain business part of that, too, that we keep in mind. But, we're back. And it is 2016. But first, well, let me say, that means it's time for the least wonderful time of the year. Predictions. But first, we need to put a bow on 2015. The year of Amiibo 2D platformers. And we're going to start off this sort of wrap-up of the year by our one of the segments that we really enjoy doing first, which is our top five, which is, you know, games that we, you know, these are our top five games. We'll go around the room, metaphorically speaking, and go through 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, maybe say a little bit about each game and why it's there. And the criteria for top five is totally personal. We're not making any effort to say this is RFN's game of the year. We did that once for Game of the Decade and came to a terrible conclusion, so we're not going to do that anymore.
Come on.
And on
It's not
that,
Ogre Battle, but I mean...
It is Ogre Battle, you're right. But it wasn't even the right decade, but it was still Ogre Battle. The Virtual Console one came out, so we're going to count it. First, I wanted to give the opportunity to the guys to speak about some games that maybe didn't make their list, potentially would have, but, you know, just got pushed out. So... I have the order here we're going to do this in. Guy, you'll be going first. Is there any games you want to mention that didn't make your top five?
Sure. Well, I just had, in general, a pretty great time playing Never Alone, Runbow, Year Walk, Affordable Space Adventures. So all these little downloadable games on the Wii U that were kind of just the right length or multiplayer, you know, co-op, but ultimately did not make the top five. And one that... I don't know. Saying it is kind of revealing. Well,
if there's any you don't want to say right now, you can save it to the end.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll give people that option because I have one that I don't necessarily want to call out right away, and I'll talk about it a little bit later. You know how I reached the decision I reached.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that none of you guys is going to talk about Never Alone or Year Walk.
Yeah,
so
I think
we're safe. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. Greg, you're up next.
Yeah, well, you say we enjoy doing this, but that is somewhat presumptuous in my case, because I find it quite difficult to
It's incredibly difficult, but we get to be positive about something. We get to be openly positive for a whole segment.
I only ever did this once before. I do find it quite difficult. And so one of the things
plus,
I kind of did...
like the knowledge that our lists influence the bonuses that these developers will get.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
For their games.
Bringing down
I've been waiting
baby.
For this. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Stan Lee had something to say about that, didn't he? But for me, I found it necessary to kind of just knock a few things out to make it easier to kind of put the list together. So one thing I said, I wouldn't put Virtual Console games in. Even though technically Demon's Crest would have qualified for me because it came out pretty much exactly a year ago in Europe. But that was on John's list last year. So, You know, I thought I'd just leave the Virtual Console scene out of it. I also left 3D Remakes.
So did Nintendo.
it may be in your country, but you know, we've had some interesting stuff lately.
You have, yes.
But anyway, I also left out 3D Remakes, which, like, you had a lot of really good stuff in the Sega 3D Classics line, like Outrun and Afterburner and the Sonic 2 that I talked about, you know, Streets of Rage. Like, there was a lot of good stuff.
Gunstar Heroes, man.
Gunstar Heroes, yeah. I mean, like I said, there was loads, so I kind of thought
So 3D Outrun came up during NWR's Game of the Year conversations and almost started a war. So, yes.
Yeah, I just think it's kind of maybe, not that it doesn't deserve to be in a top five from my point of view, but it just really just makes it easier to kind of just put that aside, a re-release like that. And actually, this might be a little bit of a spoiler, but I'm willing to say that I applied the same standard to Majora's Mask as well. Because I love that game, and I thought the re-release, the 3D version, was very good. But for the purposes of this exercise, I thought it was best left out. A couple of other things. Captain Toad was a weird situation in Europe, or at least in the UK, because it was supposed to come out on January 2nd. But then most stores kind of broke the street date and brought it out on Boxing Day. So, is it a 2014 game or a 2015 game?
I will say officially it's a 2015 game.
Yeah, it's weird. In the end, because I played it so early in the year and all that, I decided to kind of leave it out just because it kind of didn't really fit that well into like the list or whatever. But I think... And it did technically come out in 2014 here. You know, that was when people first started playing it here anyway. But I think it was an absolutely fabulous game. I hugely enjoyed playing that pretty much to exhaustion, so that was great. And one last thing, Rhythm Tengoku that I talked about, the best plus. Yeah, I would have put that on the list if I was just... But I thought I'll leave it off because it's an import game. The last time I did this, I did put it on when I played it as an import game, the Wii game. I did actually put that on the list even as an import. So I'm not even being consistent, but I'm leaving it off this time, even though it could go very high because I adore that. very much.
That's that. Oh, now I'm sad again. See, this is supposed to be a happy segment.
You
now
can
I'm
look
sad.
Forward to it coming out this year.
Can we?
No, yeah, that was presumptuous, actually. I hope so. Anyway, I really do.
So, I'm gonna hold one of mine because it's maybe a little surprising. But the other one I want to talk about is Affordable Space Adventures, which...
Yeah, see, I'm actually in the middle of playing that right now. I'll probably have new business on that very shortly in a forthcoming episode. So it just missed out.
So people who were in the 3.5-hour marathon session where NWR did its award fight are now gagging because I was one of the people who fought for this game. But keep in mind, that could mean it's my sixth best game of the year, or my sixth favorite experience I had of the year. I remember, but not necessarily best game. But I had a really good time playing that on my own. It's kind of a puzzle solving, you know, maze exploration game where you get powers in a non-obtuse way, and they're useful right away, and the game shows you how to use them, and they build on it without you having to go backwards long distances. However, I had a completely different experience when I played it with friend of the show, Carly Jung, who turned it into this crazy, like, how do you play a game like this that requires great coordination with somebody who's embraced nihilism fully? And the answer is you pray to God they don't find the horn on the vehicle when you're flying past sound-sensitive enemies.
Yeah,
once they do, you're negotiating so they don't press it.
Yeah, I've actually played that quite a bit co-op and just a little bit on my own. But I enjoyed both. So far, like I said, I'll have more to say about that. But it's a shame I couldn't quite get through a little bit more of that because it would have been firmly in the conversation. But I don't like to put stuff that I haven't fully experienced in.
Yeah, so I wrote quite a bit about it for NWR's Game of the Year stuff, so there'll be more of that. But I like the fact that the horn button exists singularly because it serves no other purpose other than to let the pilot troll every other player by setting it off during sound sensitive situations. it's magnificent. And then the other game that I put on there, and I have, and we're talking about because I haven't done it for new business yet, Fast Racing Neo, there is a serious, like, mechanically that game feels really good, and it looks really good, and it's really fast, and it holds up well. But there is a terrible, terrible problem with how it handles crashes that totally screws up the punishment reward, and it just completely took me out of the game. Like, if to where I'm thinking about F-Zero GX's way of handling punishment reward, going, that was a better implementation.
Yeah, you've that made says
a
something.
You've made a pretty huge mistake.
Yeah, that was, for me, one of the that and SteamWorld Heist were kind of the victims of Xenoblade. You know, like
that's fair.
In terms
yeah,
of getting into this conversation, you know, Xenoblade just kind of kicked everything after it out into next year. So, into the following years. So, yeah, that's.
John?
I'm certainly interested in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, honorable mention.
Yeah.
As Gunstar Heroes, like I said. I say screw Greg's rules.
They're not rules. They're just things I decided on for myself.
On your high horse in your ivory tower. Oh, man.
Gunstar Heroes. Love it. Love it. Love what Sega does
awesome.
With 3D classics.
It's awesome. And as I said when we talked about it back then, the new mode where you get to combine like the weapons however you like is really fun.
So Johnny, who was the host for most of the calendar year of 2015, it seems appropriate that he will be allowed to submit his top five, but he does not get to submit... he escapes submitting... Oh, damn it. All right, fine. Here are his honorable mentions, and I'm going to read them verbatim. Codename Steam, unfair, but fresh. Monhun 4 Ult, 50% less obtuse. Splatoon, perfect for 15-minute chunks. Box Boy, clever, and oddly addictive. And then he has a non-Nintendo game of forever, because of course he does, and of course it's Axiom Verge, because, quote, somebody has to.
Not self-serving at all.
Yeah, Johnny on the take Metz, fan
yep.
of Axiom Verge.
The same Johnny Metz that's in the credits?
The same Johnny, yes. How deep does this conspiracy go, Guillaume?
Adelman just writing the check right now.
John could chill for games that he's in the credits for, but he doesn't. You know?
But he doesn't. It's John.
That was a past life.
But you didn't, right? But you didn't, John.
He didn't, back then either, no.
And in fact, it was a hard and fast rule, so I appreciate that, John.
Hey, Integrity, that's my middle name.
John Integrity Lindemann.
Yep.
All right.
Everybody on the podcast laughs at that.
So we're going to go around for our number five, and we'll give a little bit more space to talk about this one, especially if this is the first person talking about it. But I think in general, we're going to try to let the person whose selection it is do the majority of the talking. So, Guillaume, what was your number five game of 2015?
My number five would be Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate. And so this might be a surprise because I never really talked about it. I mentioned in June going to a Monster Hunter party where someone showed me, oh, so this is how you play this game. And it was informative and was pretty fun, but then I didn't really touch it after that. But then maybe 2 months ago, I went to another gathering where someone, again, refreshed my memory on how to play this game, and it kind of clicked more. And since then, I've been playing on and off the single player. And it's just a really well-made game. It's got... I'm not completely... I guess the game kind of fails to addict me in its gameplay loop. Like, there's something that pushes me back a little bit about the whole gathering stuff to craft even the items that you need to then go on a hunt. But that's probably my major criticism of the game. But going on the actual hunts is a lot of fun. I mean, you just whack at giant monsters that look like dinosaurs or giant weird birds or whatever else with your sword or your shield and sword combo that you have your shield attached to your sword and it becomes an axe that you power up and then you just destroy monsters' faces with it. I don't know, it's pretty fun, it's pretty cool. And then you take that online or you play, co-op with someone else it becomes, you know, a lot of fun. I've never really played online, but in person when you can just, you know, shout to someone else what you're about to do and like, okay, so you throw a paintball, I'm going to set up this trap and you do this and I do that. It's a really fun game.
I will admit I was a little surprised because like you said, I mean, I remember you talking about the Monster Hunter party.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm glad you're able to finally get into it and get your sword axe shield.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to spend more time with it. It's probably one of the reasons why it's not higher is that I'm about like 20 hours into it, and 20 hours actually is not that long for a Monster Hunter game. Apparently, I still haven't made it to the second freaking town. Although I did get my merchant, I'm almost there. But it's fun and it's well made and it's more. I'm gonna use the C word. It's more charming than you would expect, despite the kind of drab looking at first glance graphics. Then you look at the details of the armor and the colors, and it's not drab at all. And it's the animations are just ridiculous. You know, you've got these cats cooking stir fries for you, and then you just scarf it down, and it's very comic booky. It's very I don't know, it's got a lot of personality, more than I would have expected from seeing just screenshots back in the day, you know?
It's Capcom. I mean, it feels Capcom-y.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Pretty wacky in a lot of ways.
Greg, what is your number five game of the year?
Number five is Codename Steam. I hear a little bit about what Johnny's saying about he feels it was unfair. I think it's partially because it's this sort of newer style of game for the developers, of Intelligent Systems, used to doing the Fire Emblem type of strategy game. It's rough around the edges in some ways, not as refined as, obviously the other games they've made, the top down kind of games in this vein. And there's a bit of a tension in the sense that I think quite a lot of the game is actually sort of exploring the maps. To find the cogs and, improve your steam pack and all that stuff. Mm. But of course, that means that they're not showing you the map, all of it at the start, the way that you typically would in a strategy game. So you're kind of going in a bit blind the first time. And I think that might be, Johnny, I think, touched on this when he spoke about it many months ago, that, that's kind of where some of the unfairness comes from. And it kind of limits, some of your strategic choices, the first time through. But I don't know. I mean, I haven't played something like, Valkyria Chronicles or whatever that I suppose is quite similar, isn't it?
It is.
So for me, it was very fresh. I really liked how fresh it was. As I've said on a previous episode, I really liked the fact that, it does have, quite a lot of, strategic choices to make, but at the same time, it will occasionally come down to your reflexes, just making a sniper shot on an enemy's weak point, where you've got to time it just right on the animation cycle. That mix, those two sort of things which seem quite separate, coming together, and playing different and equal, but kind of equal roles is really cool to me. And, as opposed to kind of random number generator kind of stuff. I don't think it quite gets as high as it might because, it's not like as perfect as maybe some of their other strategy games. I think there's some kind of crude elements into, okay, we'll just like keep respawning enemies to kind of force you along. Think that's as part of that, I think, is a function of the Overwatch mechanic, which I really like. The Overwatch mechanic idea, it says, you leave one of your characters with steam points remaining so that it's able to take an action as a counter. Because, I mean, one of the things I really like about that is that, in Fire Emblem, you get that thing where, you might have a choke point and you stick your highest defense guy on there and the enemies will just crash against him with no regard, and he could just counter sort of infinitely and wipe them all out as they try to attack him and fail because he's so defensive. Here, your counters will still cost you sort of action points, essentially. So, you have to actually think about that if you're going to play defensively. But I guess the thing about that is it gives you an incentive to just kind of inch along very slowly, so that you are leaving some steam over for counteractions for the Overwatch mechanic each time. But of course, the way they counter that is to say, okay, we're going to keep spawning enemies behind you so you just can't, crawl your way through the level. And that's a bit, like I said, it's a bit of a crude way to do it. Maybe, they could come up with something a bit better balanced if they ever did iterate on this game, but I can't imagine they will, because I don't think it did very well. in terms of sales and stuff. But I mean, that's a shame because I really enjoyed it. Although it must be said, I had the benefit of playing it on a new 3DS and after the patch.
Right.
Because it actually came out later here. It came out like pretty much the same time as Splatoon here. That's one case where it, you know, probably benefited from the delay, to be honest, because, you know, that skipping through the enemy animations quickly helps the pacing, and it's helped me actually kind of replay the game on the harder difficulty where the steam is gone as soon as you move a square. And that's the thing. I mean, in that mode, it takes on a very different character. It's got kind of a new game plus feel where, you know, you're bringing all the upgrades and the characters that you got from your first playthrough into another playthrough. Like I said, obviously now you have to be a lot more careful about your movement. It's not really about exploration anymore because you've probably found everything that, you know, on previous playthroughs, and you can't save anymore. So it is more difficult in some ways, but then you've got a way stronger party in other ways. So it was really replayable for me, and I must have put about between 40, 50 hours into it at this point over the course of the 6-7 months since I've had it. So, you know, it's a real shame that it's kind of sank without a trace, but, you know, I still really, really enjoyed it.
So, my number three game, or excuse me, number five game. Let's just skip ahead. My number five game of 2015 is Human Resource Machine, which is probably the biggest swerve on the list. I don't think it's the best game. I don't think it's the fifth best game I play. I think it's definitely got some technical issues that are kind of eh. I think the presentation is okay, but a little bit uninspiring. Not uninspired. It's got a very neat aesthetic. It's just not that interesting to look at. Although that's part of the design conceit, obviously. Mm-hmm. And of course it's relatively thin, but at the same time, it really deeply probes what it's trying to do. The reason it's on this list is I have been programming for a very, very long time. I have taught programming to non-programmers and to aspiring programmers dozens and dozens and dozens of times. And one of the things that you often see when you're kind of in that field and, you know, you hear people not in that field talk about, we got to get the kids into STEM, is you see these really poorly illustrated and ill-conceived things like, this teach you programming. And then you see it, and it's really just teaching, you know, really basic stuff. I'd rather just sit them down and go like, look, this is how you manage your, this is an input, this is an output, this is how you manage stuff. What this game does, and I think very ingeniously, is it doesn't just sit there and try to teach, like, the hyper-basic concepts of, this is a variable, although it does do that. It goes and it starts to expand, eventually reaching sort of elements of what you would actually see in a computer science textbook, not in a programming, you know, algorithmic understandings, you know, trying to come up with most efficient algorithms to solve a problem. The game actually scores you based on how efficient you are. And what I found interesting is it doesn't say this is the most efficient way to do it. It sort of sets like a baseline average for what would be considered efficient, because you may find stuff the game's creators just didn't, because it is actually an effective programming mechanism. So I did one where I undercut the target by, you know, 15 moves. And I realized it was just because I came up with a solution they probably didn't find when they did it. It makes you think both about what an algorithm is, how to construct an algorithm. And it does a very good job showing that and building on that. And then it sort of gives you the opportunity to find ways to make that more efficient, which is really what is the ultimate challenge of any kind of computer science problem, is not just solving the problem, but solving the problem in a way that's not wasteful. And I really appreciated that. That's probably the best I've seen this illustrated in an entertainment package in my life. You know, I've seen them all, and you know, this is the one that I thought really, I could give this to somebody who doesn't understand programming, and in conjunction with kind of conversational topics, could really get them pretty deep, pretty quick. Now, obviously, nothing impractical because it's not an actual programming language they're showing, but conceptually, understanding what programming is, and how it's more than just knowing what line of code to put there, how it's more about understanding how to break down the problem and solve it in a procedural way. It is the best illustration I've seen of that in a long time. So I really appreciated it as a product, even if it wasn't necessarily the fifth most fun game I had this year.
Nice.
John.
All right, again, thumbing my nose at Greg and his rules.
they were just for me, John.
Super Mario Brothers for the NES.
Number five for me is 3D Outrun. Really, one of the this I think along with Space Harrier is probably one of the games that benefits the most from the 3D treatment from Sega, which is always they always do these things really top notch. They always do a really good job with these games. It's definitely a seminal racing game from the 80s. I loved it in the 80s, love it now. You know, branching paths, sort of like, you know, that will, you know, remind you of Star Fox a little bit. And just looks really good, has a really good soundtrack, and Sega just did a great job with it. So that's my number five.
No, it's great. Really love that. Definitely benefits a lot from it. And also, it's like, again, the wrinkle that they put in that one, they always seem to put one wrinkle in for these versions, M2, is that based on what path you take, what end point you reach, you get like a different kind of capability for the car that you can use. Got almost like a cheat, you know, maybe it'll go faster.
Oh, not almost
when it goes
a cheat.
Off.
It's a cheat.
Yeah, it is a cheat. Yeah, you know, but I don't mean literally like you have to put a code in that kind of cheat. You know,
right, it's
something you select from an option. But yeah, it just so you know, it's they always do that kind of thing. Like you get supersonic mode in Sonic 2, which is fun because I never would have got supersonic any other way because that bonus stage is not fun. but they do a great job with those. And Outrun was fantastic.
So Johnny's number five. Johnny's number five is... Sorry, I accidentally closed his email.
All right. I do that all the time with his emails.
Johnny's number five game of 2015 is SteamWorld Heist. It's not as immediately satisfying as Dig, SteamWorld Dig. But Heist is surprisingly, quote, grabby for a turn-based strategy game. And I love the robot cowgirl in space premise.
Surprisingly grabby for a turn-based strategy game. That's like their whole thing. Like they hook you. It's like the term "one more turn" comes from turn-based strategy games. Come on.
Surprise! Maybe you mean surprisingly handsy.
I see.
Very inappropriate. That's what we're getting
at
here.
That's the other thing RFN's striving for this year is to be more appropriate.
What are you, somebody's grandma or something?
Maybe I am, John.
Maybe Johnny just had a gummy Venus de Milo stuck to his rear end. We don't know.
Sweet, sweet candy.
Oh, God. Guillaume, what is your number four game of 2015?
My number four game, you might think the game might come higher on the list, but it's Super Mario Maker, which has been a lot of fun. I've kind of I haven't played as much as I would have liked to lately because other things have taken up my time. But the first two or three weeks, I was really into it. I was it was a real joy to just find a good idea and then try to put it into practice to shape a level the way I wanted to. And once I got all the tools and I scanned my Olimar amiibo and I could make my Pikmin stage, I was like, yes, this is what I was born for.
A life well lived.
I can finally fulfill my purpose on this planet. And it was really good. And of course, you know, like you've got this very Mario Paint-esque interface. It's very fun to use. It's very easy. And, you know, there's a few missteps, I think. I don't think that the idea of locking stuff the way they did, the different tools that you unlock like day after day, or if you just spam them all over the place, then you unlock them earlier. Like I don't see what purpose it serves. A nephew-in-law got the game at Christmas, and you know, like 7-year-olds, they watch YouTube and they know the tricks, and so what I got to see was a 7-year-old just spam stuff for hours and hours, trying to unlock everything, not even trying to create a stage with the first set of tools. So, I think that Nintendo just did not have its finger on the pulse of kids everywhere. But other than that, I think that they did a lot more right than wrong. And I guess the other major complaint that keeps it from being higher on my list is that, as I said, the whole poor timing of the piranha plants and stuff like that gives it an off-brand Mario kind of feel. And so that brings down the experience a little bit for me when I'm playing stages. You know, like if I wanted to play Super Gianna Sisters Maker, I would, you know, go to the store and grab that. But I wanted a Mario Maker game where I could play Mario stages, and it just feels off a little bit.
Coming soon to the ZX Spectrum near you.
Mm-hmm.
Greg!
Yeah, number four is Splatoon. Yeah, very, very much enjoyed this one. I get one of the major reasons why it's not higher on the list probably is the fact that this is not an off TV game.
Right.
I've played a hell of a lot of Wii U online games like Smash and Mario Kart 8 very casually because they are off TV games. Whereas this, you kind of had to make more of an effort to kind of squeeze in time with it. Did probably end up being like closer to the kind of 15-minute chunks that Johnny spoke of for me as a result. But yeah, when I did get the chance to play quite a lot of it, and it's been a little while now, I should definitely check in with it sooner or later with some of the new stuff that's been added in the interim. But I've really thoroughly enjoyed it. You know, I mean, the single player stuff was fun. You know, not that hugely substantial or anything, but it was probably like exceeded my expectations a little bit given kind of, you know, some of the chatter in the run up to release. But obviously the multiplayer is where it's at, and I've had some hugely fun experiences at certain times, especially with the ranked battle stuff. I remember it was one particular game where it was the tower, the sort of control mode, and you know, you're in that sudden death part of it where, you know, the other team has established the better score to beat, but you're in control of the tower for now, and you know, the game is going to last until you lose control of the tower, so you've got to get, you know, past the goal line. Otherwise, you're going to lose. And I'm there, you know, I've just got killed, and I'm there. The only way I'm going to really gonna be able to bring anything to the party is to be able to teleport over there with my bubble shield and shield everyone as they come up to the last line of defense. So I'm just spraying it all over the place indiscriminately to build up the shield. They're frantically doing it, do it in time, activate the shield just as we hit their last line of defense. We kill them all, walk in there like conquering heroes. It is a real fist pumping moment. There's not a lot that gets me to fist pump in video games, but that was it. You know, that was just like, yes, yes. They probably thought, what the hell is that useless twat doing just spraying it around? But no, I had a plan and we won, damn it. So yeah, it's great fun.
Nice. Oh,
that's pretty amazing. Guillaume.
Yes. Okay, so my number three now is Bucks Boy. I played this game and I talked about it not too long ago.
Hang on a minute.
How
have we gone to his three?
Sorry. Wait, I screwed up. I'm sorry. I'm just...
There we go.
I've been up for a long time. I'm tired. I'm very tired. It's my turn. And I screwed up already, and I apologize. And
it's fine, I'm editing this out.
Funnily enough, actually, you probably shouldn't, because my number four game is Box Boy.
What?
For the Nintendo 3DS. From our friends at HAL, who actually just released Box Boy 2 in Japan yesterday, which is a crazy turnaround. I can't remember what they're called. Box Boy 2, Box Boy More Boxes or something insane.
Another
like
box, another according box, to Seren.
Another box. Thanks. Thanks, assholes. So Box Boy for me was interesting. So it was one of those games where I reached out to you know, people on Twitter saying, hey, this is what I've played this year. I'm trying to get some games in before, you know, we do this segment. What games did I miss? I think I may have also thrown out a list of candidates. And resoundingly, the response was, you should be playing Box Boy. Or in some cases, it was, why haven't you played Box Boy? And I was like, well, okay then, I'll play Box Boy. And
we've got very judgmental listeners.
Well, we do. But, you know, we you get the listeners you earn. So I went through and played. So this was during the previously mentioned NWR Game of the Year conversation, which seemed to drag on for roughly the time that Odysseus was away from home. And I ran into the same problem I've mentioned in other puzzle games. It happened on Pushmo, especially, where I just felt like I was just crushing this game, and I was just bored bored. But mechanically, like, I was enjoying what the game was doing. Like, I thought it was very, how boxes could be manipulated and how you could manipulate yourself using the boxes and how you could use the environment in conjunction with boxes to manipulate your position and other stuff. I thought that was very clever, and the very simple aesthetic was actually somewhat deceptive, but I just wasn't getting it. And I ripped through probably 14 worlds during that meeting. Just ran through them. And then the next day, it was a vacation. The next day I picked it up and I went through 15, and then the game took a pivot and it got tricky and I had to really start thinking again. And suddenly there was a stage where I couldn't figure out how to get the crown and leave. And I was kind of having a panic attack. Suddenly the game is now putting up resistance and I had to really think for a long time to get through it. And, you know, I pushed through the rest of the game and I really enjoyed it. And, you know, they're definitely, it's the same with, even though this is HAL, I'm just happy to see HAL release a game in one sense. But I would have liked to have seen the difficulty curve ramp up a little faster. It's something that Nintendo's published puzzle games I've run into a couple times now, where it's just kind of like, the intro is kind of light. I'd like to see it get going sooner. And I know this game has a lot of mechanical concepts it needed to introduce, and I think it does a masterful job introducing them. I think how it constructs stages to really show you one thing and builds whole worlds around expanding how that thing can be used before in the next world using it in conjunction with other stuff. It's not always giving you a new mechanic. Sometimes the new mechanic is just interplay of existing mechanics, but it's always building on a singular idea for a stretch of time to get you good with it. And I thought that was really well executed. So I'm interested in another box, if only because I would assume that another box will have a little bit more challenge and maybe some of the ramp up will be a little bit better. But I'm really surprised at my enjoyment of this game.
Cool.
John.
All right. Probably a surprise to nobody. Number four for me is Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate, as already mentioned by Guillaume.
Yeah, actually, I'm surprised it's not higher.
Me too.
No, it's not. But, I mean, it doesn't mean I didn't enjoy it.
Obviously, it's your number four game.
Yeah. Completely.
We're just so used to pigeonholing as the resident Monster Hunter fan that when you don't live up to the stereotype, it's just shocking.
Yeah, well, you know, don't believe the hype, Guillaume. I really, really enjoyed it. I mean, I like the changes that they've made, but of course, I'm a sucker for the series anyways, so they didn't really have to try a whole lot of new stuff to please me, but...
I would say that gives you a different perspective than most people who have really gotten behind Monster Hunter 4, though. A lot of people who have been really, you know, like, outspoken, people who are like, well, this was the one that got me in, but I think you as a veteran can give sort of a different perspective here.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked kind of the changes that they made to the terrain that made things a lot fresher because it made the encounters with monsters, it made them feel a lot faster paced. I felt like there was a lot more chasing, whereas in previous games, you know, they would be in your area and then they would just run out and then, well, you would just run to the other area. But there was a little bit more, there's a lot more hide and seek in Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate, where because you can climb up and, you know, they may be above you, they may be below you in certain cases. They can hide under you. Like, you can come into an area and you won't just see them right there like you used to in old games. There really was just like, you know, the only mystery was, did they move to the next area over or did they, you know, move two or three over? And then you would eventually just keep running around and you would find them. But now you can miss them if you just kind of run through an area quickly because they might be down in some ravine, hidden. Like, you know, some of the flying enemies, they tend to kind of roost underneath stuff and you can hop all the way down and you may still not see them if you don't look up. So there's kind of like little wrinkles like that. But it still retains the same gameplay, the same kind of addictive, you know, loop where you beat this monster and get this item and then craft cooler armor. And then that cooler armor allows you to go after another, a bigger monster that gives you cooler stuff and you get cooler armor out of that. So it's still the same kind of thing that veterans like myself still really like. So really, really good job by Capcom.
I think it's impressive that they were able to make this game more inviting, but also make changes that veterans like yourself found really, you know, really, really good decisions for the franchise. Because oftentimes when you make a game that has this hardcore fan base, more open, it tends to sort of alienate some of the most hardcore because yep. they because now oh you went and baby-fied it or whatever derogatory terminology you seek to use. And of course that's I'm being somewhat derogatory by using that terminology. Sometimes games get not dumbed down but get changed for broad appeal in a way that isn't conducive with what made them charming to begin with.
Yeah, and I mean they removed some stuff that was sort of tedious, like the farming stuff was kind of tedious in past versions, and they
swimming.
Changed that. Yeah, the swimming, yeah. Yeah, I don't miss that at all. That's very true. In fact, you know, I haven't really thought about it very much because I just didn't like it at all. But yeah, like the farming
was only in
was
three,
kind of
right?
Tedious.
That was they introduced yeah. it in World Try, you know, and
yeah.
Get thought better of it.
Yep. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Cool. So Johnny's number four is Fast, all caps, Racing Neo. It's another one of those games, but it's the best one since F-Zero GX. Mixes in a sublime boosting rhythm and is not quite as brutal as its spiritual predecessor. Now, Johnny's statement is technically true because Tube Slider came out before F-Zero GX.
God.
Guillaume, what is your number three game?
Oh, the intrigue.
Of 2015.
Oh, I wonder. Yeah, it's Bucks Boy. Yeah, I've said a lot about the game recently, and James covered a lot of points, although I think that it is an easy-ish puzzle game comparatively to something like Pushmo and stuff like that. But at the same time, it's kind of refreshing. I liked how each mechanic didn't really overstay its welcome, at least before the credits. And it just the game has a very simplistic style, but again, they do a lot with it. Sometimes, you know, you complete the level and your Bucks Boy is going to do like kind of a cocky pose, and if you don't know what that's like, it's a box with two legs doing cocky pose. Imagine it. And or sometimes, you know, like he just starts doing like a river dance kind of thing. It's like, what the hell? You know, a surprising amount of care went into the presentation for this game. But beyond that, yeah, like I just like love the fact that every time that you solve a part of a level, each time you solve a puzzle, it just auto checkpoints and you're not gonna have to do it again. And I just love this kind of care to not have you repeat the same steps over and over again.
And you can very quickly reset to that checkpoint if you want.
You can, yeah, it's very easy. And if you get stumped by a part of a level, there's a handy hint system that's very forgiving and that uses play coins. So if you've got a surplus of play coins, you can just breeze through the game. But you can breeze through the game without using the play coins either, so...
I didn't think of it when you mentioned it, but until you mentioned it, but it is they get a surprising amount of mileage out of a quadrilateral.
They
like,
do.
But I guess it makes sense. This is how a company who made a circle into a recognizable character.
That's right. Can't wait until Bucks Boy can take the abilities of its enemies and just starts breathing fire and shit.
That is the second game.
Mm-hmm.
Greg.
Yep, number three is Yoshi's Woolly World, something I've spoken about plenty, so I won't dwell on it here. You know, sort of relevant to the next segment on this particular episode, you know, this was a game that I kind of predicted once, that, you know, Goodfeel should make a Yoshi game, give it their treatment and all that, and... It's been a long time coming, so, you know, so it had a long time to kind of build up in my mind and all that, but ultimately I was very happy with it. I'm certainly very happy with the visuals and how they translated the sort of Yoshi world into that aesthetic, but also gameplay-wise, I think what I liked most about it was how focused the level design was around sort of, you know, single concepts, either, you know, stuff that very much was in Yoshi's Island on Super Nintendo, or some of the new stuff, like the Chain Chomp that follows you around, or the boos or that come along late in the game that you can sort of fill in as platforms and all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of nice ideas in there. I suppose the only reason why it couldn't quite scale a bit higher on this list is I think it's a little bit more adherent to the Yoshi's Island template that would have been ideal. Given that, you know, it has been kind of, it has resurfaced before as well, you know, with the Artoon games, but it shouldn't really be held against this one.
It's the first Yoshi sequel that does justice to the original Yoshi's Island.
Yeah,
it only took four hardware iterations before we could replicate that experience.
It was very much the hardware that was the problem, clearly.
Absolutely, yeah.
No, I mean, like I said, it's certain things, you know, I mean, it does improve in areas, you know, there isn't a Baby Mario thing annoying you, there isn't, you know, like, you will get credit for everything you collect the first time through, so, you know, it's not a case of like, oh, well, what's even the point if I don't get everything? You know, which I think is important, especially is because there is a certain amount of things that if you're a real Super Yoshi veteran like I am, you can kind of intuit some of these things, like with the hidden clouds and stuff. But there's a lot of stuff that is quite, you know, not that it's hidden very, I don't know whether well is the right term, but it's certainly very hidden, let's say. You know,
because, very obtusely hidden.
Yeah, it's a bit obtuse, I think, especially if you're not as much of a Yoshi fan as I am, you know, and I don't think it's great design in any event, even if you are familiar with it. And I think they probably could have moved past that a little bit more if they were, you know, and it might have reached a little bit higher on my list. But these are minor issues. I played it absolutely exhaustion, loved it. Great to see Yoshi get such a good game again.
Cool. So, my number three game of 2015 is Yo-Kai Watch. Which,
oh, James.
What?
Yeah, I know. So, when I had my list, I had every 2015 game I played on a Nintendo platform listed. And I just sat there and I struck through game after game. Like, alright, that one's out. Legend of Legacy, get the hell out of here. You don't belong. I just sat there and
is that
a
dishonorable mention?
Well, no, it's just, I mean, I've said my piece on that game on the show.
Okay.
But like, it was just the first 2015 game that popped into my head that got removed during that phase. And I got it down to like 10, and then I kind of weeded it down a little bit more. I was like, did I really like that game, or is it just kind of like not in a place where like I just didn't care enough to take it off the list? And I sort of worked it some down. I got down to a couple. I got to about 7. And then I sat there and sorted them for a while. And I tried different mechanisms for sorting them. And one of the ways I decided to sort them was, how many times did I go back to this game? Like, how many times did I pick it back up again? And even though there was nothing to do specifically, just pick it up and have a go at it. And we got an email, and I'll do this one in the mailbag later, but we got an email from GX who asked me, you know, he pulled out the meme that I've used a bunch of times. This is a level 5 ass level 5 game.
And is that, like, a meme, or is it just that you forget that
me.
You've said
it's,
that?
It's my, well, it, I think, so I, originally it was I forgot, and now I'm aware that I'm saying it, and I just say it anyway.
Okay.
But in the same year that gave me LBX, in the same year that I played the, played Inazuma 11 again, because I thought it was a different game. My mistake. Well, I bought it thinking it was a different game.
Yeah.
I didn't play it. Once I started playing it, I knew it was the same fucking game, but I was like, oh, okay.
No, that would be really problems with your memory at that point.
Here we are. So, like, I have experienced that particular mode of level 5 game design. Because, you know, they've got a couple different models they follow. And that's a very specific, you know, you can trace the iterative qualities of those series evolving from one another as time goes on. And LBX, it had every advantage. It's got kids battling robots. Like, that's something that as a kid I would have eaten up. It's got an awful, awful, awful story, but in the best possible way. Like, I should have been all over that, but it didn't. And I thought, maybe I've finally shaken the level 5-ism out of my system. And then I played this game, and it's so blissfully dumb. Like, it's not, the combat's not super complicated, but there's some interesting components to it. But it's such a ridiculous and stupid game world that I just enjoyed kind of spending time in it. Like, even after I cleared the main story, like, I spent time trying to build up a party, doing these crazy, insane quests to get these legendary yokai that I could then go merge them, you know, SMT style to get even better things so I could try to beat the, you know, the post-game boss. And like, I did not expect, like, I expected I'd play this game for, a, you know, 15 hours or so and then put it aside. I wouldn't finish it. Just, you know, I was going to talk about it on the show because it was an important game for Nintendo, but I played this game and I wrung this game dry. And I'm, cause it's just, there's something about what this game is. It's more than the sum of its components. And it made me reappreciate what Level 5 is good at. In a year where I played a couple of their games, I was kind of like, man, maybe I'm through this. And coming off Fantasy Life last year, where I was really just checked out. So, good on them. Like I said, this isn't necessarily my five best games. This is the five games for me this year. So, John, what is your number five?
My number three.
Three. I don't care. Whatever number this is.
My number three, James, is Super
Mario
Maker.
No, I asked you for your number five, John.
All right. Let's talk about 3D Outrun one more time, shall we?
All right. What is your number three, John?
My number three is Super Mario Maker. So, yes. What can you really say? I mean, I'm not gonna reiterate what already has been said. But, I mean, I really enjoyed it. Would cite the same flaws that have been cited already about unlocking stuff. Just didn't really have to be there. Just the way, sharing your creations online, having other people play through them, the way it tracks who plays through them, who completed it, it's incredibly satisfying to make what you know is a stupidly hard, creation. And seeing people fail at it miserably, and then having that one beacon of light actually beat it. And then they're kind of like, eh, it's all right.
Or when they post on the Miiverse, seen better.
Yeah,
and then they get banned for it.
Yeah.
It's true. Yeah. How many times would you have to post that? I mean, I've played like 1,500 levels virtually. If virtually any level I play, I might enjoy it a lot. Technically, I've seen better. I'm not going to fucking say it, though.
Because if you did, you'd be removed from the Miiverse, so it's fine.
Yeah. And also, I mean, it's the perfect game if you just feel like getting some, if you're just getting some good platforming, some Mario, not necessarily good, but just if you need a Mario fix, add that asterisk in there because it's like, it won't necessarily be good.
Got to get your Mario patch on.
Yeah. I mean, if at any point you just feel like running through a whole bunch of Mario, you'll just pick one of the kind of, modes and you can just run through them. And, some of them will be bad, but every once in a while you come across one where you're just like, wow, that's really, really good. Even if it's difficult, some of them are really, really well designed.
But again, if you get one that's bad, you just hold on a button, you skip it.
Yep. Exactly.
Gong it.
Yep. It was really, really good. I really enjoyed it. I didn't spend as much time with it as I thought I would, but that's probably more up to me being, not really a builder. I'm more of a player. I mean, I definitely played with it more than I actually created anything with it.
Emperor builder?
Empire builder, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Now, for number three, for Dr. Metz, we have the Descent beginning. Xenoblade Chronicles X. This game would probably be higher if I had been able to play more of it. From what I've experienced so far, is tantalizing and overwhelming in all the best ways. Our first Xenoblade mention. And now, Guy, what is your number two game of the year of our Lord 2015?
Yes, the first loser, basically, of 2015 is Steam World Heist. Another latecomer in the year, but I'm really glad I played it when I did in time to make this list. As we pointed out when we talked about it earlier in the previous episode, it's a 2D side-scrolling turn-based strategy game, and the action parts of it are very much Worms-like. Which is an aspect that I really enjoy. You just try to position your character behind cover perfectly and just take that one shot. Like you can try to take risks sometimes and get as far as you can into enemy lines and try to do the most to just wreck the enemy there. Or you can try to stay from afar and snipe them. But then the game is very good at pushing you forward. You trigger security, basically, and you're going to get more and more enemies invading the levels if you dilly-dally. So It's a really well-made game. It's got a lot of personality. I love the character designs. I guess it's worth mentioning in 2015 and 2016 that it's probably got like one of the most, I don't know, like equal representation of female and male characters, and they're all robots. I don't know. So I guess it, and all the female characters have various body types, so it wins like a Sarkey Award for good representation. It's very well written. There's a lot of little jokes and the weapon descriptions and the dialogue. And the more you stick with certain characters, the more of their backstory you unlock until, you know, when you finish the game, then you get kind of their conclusion. And it's an A-plus game. I really love it. And I'm glad I played it.
But not enough.
Yeah, it's a first loser. It's not the best.
Greg, who is your first loser for the year of 2015?
It is Xenoblade Chronicles X. So, yeah, I've played an awful lot of this since we last broadcast an episode, so to speak. It's not dissimilar to Yoshi's Woolly World in the sense that it's something I've been anticipating a long time. You know, back when I was last on the show, you know, in the before my absence, I talked about thinking one of the exciting things about Wii U with the idea of a gamepad and off-screen play and all that is, you know, being able to put more time into an RPG where, you know, I might play it on the big screen to appreciate the graphics and, you know, make certain key points in the game or the story stuff or, you know, the finale or whatever, but then be able to put a lot more time into the kind of side stuff through the off TV play. And, you know, it pleases me greatly that that has come to fruition. And so, you know, whereas with Xenoblade on Wii, you know, kind of got through it with doing very, very little of the side stuff. Just kind of, you know, just to see the core journey of the game through that remarkable world that it created. With this one, and it's, you know, definitely a good, you know, a good thing, because this game is far more about just the, you know, the totality of the world and doing all these things in it, whatever you kind of feel like, rather than like driving you towards a particular kind of narrative journey. You know, I've been able to really delve into it in gradually. I mean, it doesn't explain things that well. It's got a huge manual that will explain some stuff, but it was such an extensive experience for me, just kind of I gradually picked things up as I went through it. You know, and maybe that meant that I wasted some of the time that I played it, but you know, when you're playing off TV and it's kind of like while other things was going on, there's definitely some flab in my playtime for sure. It's like I was watching the Oregon bowl game.
Yeah.
And it was kind of, oh, this is a total non-game. I'll concentrate more on Xenoblade. And then it went insane.
Crazy.
TCU comeback and all that. And then Xenoblade got largely ignored once it got into triple overtime or whatever it was. So, you know, like, yeah, there's flab on there because of that. But that's the thing. You could just kind of play very casually such a game with all these systems. And, you know, it's a, you know, probably people think of it as this really ultra hardcore kind of game in many ways. You could just do little things with it, I find, do the off TV play to your heart's content, and just make little bits of progress. I really, really enjoyed it so far. Like, you know, there's still a few things I'd like to do before I kind of walk away from it altogether.
Yeah. Well, and the game actually rewards you for not playing it, because that's why it's got that setting of don't auto power down, because you can leave it on and collect money.
Yeah, the money stuff. I mean, I think probably there is the possibility of spoiler cast on this one day.
Yeah,
really sort of drill down into it. But I will say, just, you know, non-spoiler stuff that talk about it. Like, I really like the way that your charting of the world, exploring it, and, you know, putting the probes in, all that factors into the in-game economy. I think it's one of the most sort of clever ways of tying that in. You'd rather just, oh, you kill enemies and you get gold, and you find some chests and you get gold. It's really cool. There's almost like, the magazines of my youth would have called God game element to it, in terms of, you know, that chaining together the different types of probes in the most efficient way to get more money and to get more of the Miranium and all that kind of stuff. Not anything I was even remotely anticipating, but I actually rather got into it as it went on.
You'll find mini games within mini games.
Yes.
Sort of, which is extremely satisfying for me.
I once spent an entire half of a college basketball game completely reworking all of my probe layouts on the entire world.
Yeah, like I mean, like, I wish they would have
a
pull all probes button so I could just start all over and just I really wish they had that.
There's an economic punishment for doing it.
Yeah, that's right. It costs money for you to do that. So
I put the bill.
Yeah, I know. But like when I was done, I was getting pretty much triple production from everything.
Yeah, like, but and it feels so good. It's like,
this is so good. Like I had like a 17 probe chain, and I'm like, oh.
Well, that's the thing. I had
maxed it out 9 probes before I'd finished putting them all down.
Well, yeah. I mean, right now there's a few probes that I still haven't uncovered. I've done almost the entire map. Not to digress, but I'm really pissed off because I can't get all the chains that I want. So it's just that kind of.
Oh yeah, those last probes.
Yeah,
that's true. That was kind of a little bit annoying. This is more spoiler cast territory, but the reason why I didn't get the last few probes is kind of annoying. A case of maybe stuff not being more clear, but in general, I kind of like fumbling my way through it. Even though, like I said, you could argue it wasted some of my time
in
a way.
It feels thematically appropriate, though.
Yeah, I mean, basically the premise of the game is just, you know, there's something we need to find, so let's explore everything. You know, like, right. that's really, you could kind of forget about the narrative reason for that, really.
We know nothing about this world. It's freaking nuts. And also, we have to find this thing. Mm-hmm. So we have to explore everything because it could be anywhere.
Yep.
Or the next thing that could kill us could be right there, and we need to know about it. We'll talk more about Xenoblade throughout this segment, I am sure.
Probably. I
assure you. My
no, it's not going to give anything away, but...
my number two game of the year, for me personally, is Super Mario Maker. And here's... You know, we've talked about the elegance of the gamepad as an editing tool and how well it works and how beautifully Nintendo created an editor where so many games have tried to have stage editors and it just not worked out. I mean, there have been games sold on the premise of you can make your own stages, like Little Big Planet, where it just doesn't come together. And this came together so cleanly that on a platform that ultimately really struggles with mindshare, really, really properly struggles to get the attention, you know, of the gaming media, you know, at large, this game just dominated, you know, maybe not their coverage, but it dominated sort of the mind space of these games because it unlocks so much, you know, you unlock so much personal ability to create and to design, and it makes you understand what makes a good level. It gives you the tools to make experiment, change until you get it really tuned down, and then it gives you this awesome reward of seeing every place people died and seeing the Miiverse posts.
It is interesting, that part of it. There were some shockers when one of the great things about Mario Maker for me, I think, is not just not just the fact that obviously the gamepad's a beautiful tool for making this kind of stuff a lot more elegantly than something like a Little Big Planet. But for me, it's the ease with which you slip in and out of playing it. You know, you just stick Mario at a certain point, press select, bang, you're playing it. You know, so the rapid fire kind of play testing you can do really makes you feel like, you know, you are getting a better sense of how this thing comes together as you go. You know, you can really kind of chisel away at this level and just test out each individual little bit and see if it's coming together the way you think. However, for all of that, you still look at that thing and say, how are people dying there? I really don't see it. But, you know, they obviously approach it with just a completely different perspective than you do. So I spent an obscene amount of time playtesting my levels to try and make them a bit easier, try and make them a bit more clearly understood. And I still didn't get there. But God knows if it hadn't been as easy as it is to do that, they would have been a hell of a lot worse.
Yeah, I think for me, the problem was that just the time investment, I never really spent as much time as I should have just hitting these things. And I think actually the unlock stuff, I wish I had actually been a little bit more or a little bit less of just like, oh, fuck it, here's 10,000 blocks, give me what I want to unlock. Because I think if I had actually spent time sort of experimenting with each component, I wouldn't be quite as out like when I have them all. Because one thing that's interesting is these components... there's a little bit of mystery in the interface. Like, the game shows you to shake stuff, but it kind of shows you, like, it doesn't really show it to you explicitly. It's just kind of like, I mean, think about the manual for this game. It's really an art book. Or at least the one that comes with the game. Like, it's just examples. But, you know, you pick up an item and you shake it, and suddenly it transforms in a completely unexpected way. Or you combine these things that have no business being combined.
Yep.
And it just works. Like, it just works. So there's this constant mystery of, like, okay, what if I put this next to this on this on a conveyor belt with this? What's going to happen?
Yeah, like, that's the thing. There's no way they would let me do this. And then they actually do.
That's the thing. The actual creation part is very much a form of play. Yeah. When you combine just, you know, sort of probing, you know, what the possibilities are with the playtesting part and all that, it's a hell of a lot more like playing a game than I thought it was going to be. And certainly a hell of a lot more like playing a game than making something on any other game that I've ever seen custom level stuff in.
Yeah, and I think part of that is just like them not showing you, like not just telling you how to make it, but just letting you experiment. And the fact that there is some stuff in there that is a little bit hidden. There's a little bit of hidden stuff in that editor. But then you watch, you know, people online who make these levels. You watch somebody like Dan Reichert, who just made these nightmare levels, just complete fucking lunacy. But like how combining these items, like you have to go across the stage and go all the way up this one chain, take the red shell down, use it to knock a power block loose from somewhere else, and you have to do it before, you know, something happens that causes another power block you can't see to get hit by a thwomp off screen. And all these things interplay that people have experimented with, like dropping a P switch on the conveyor belt on a door that's one block too high, and then having to hit the up button right as you jump on the P switch and it lines up with the door. Like, things that you would never, because for that one brief second, Mario has something under his feet and can open the door.
Yeah.
It's like, there's this crazy stuff that, you know, once he hits this P switch, he's not going through that door. But there's just, like, the ideas and the creativity that this thing has created online, and just seeing stages and seeing people who maybe make stages better than I could ever make them, and are more think in a way that allows them to create complete lunacy. This is a really cool product. And the thing that made it really important for me is I look at this as sort of like the delivery of the Wii U, as like this year really was the Wii U delivering. As its concept. And I'm worried like crazy, and we'll talk about this during the NX stuff, that maybe we won't be able to get the next Maker. But I want another Maker. Like, I want Nintendo to really think about what Maker can be. Either put out more Mario types, if they can swing it, or give us something else, because I think that they have really unlocked the mystery for making a create a stage or create a game. And I think it's really important that people now playing this game, I earnestly believe that there will be people who, thanks to Mario Maker, now realize, oh, I could make a game, or I could design stages in a game, and will then do that. And I think that is an unbelievable achievement for something that, when we saw it at E3 2014, we thought, I guess that was cool, but I mean, they're going to screw this up somehow.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's not going to be as good as we think it's going to be.
And the thing is, they didn't.
Yeah, I mean, I think they
blew our expectations away.
Yeah, I mean, you were talking about Mindshare, and you know, one of the things, I think that this is one of the signature products from, you know, on the Wii U. I think it's one of the most unique games on the platform. But also, I mean, this is the one game that I can point to on Wii U where I can say, you are not going to get this experience anywhere else at all. Splatoon, right. Very unique, but it's a shooter at the end of the day. You can get shooters elsewhere.
I think
you're not going to get Super Mario Maker
the gamepad
anywhere but on Wii U.
Right. Yeah, it's really cool. It's really, really ingeniously designed.
Mm-hmm.
John, what is your number two game of 2015?
My number two game, just mentioned it, Splatoon. Mm. Splatoon. And you know, I feel like I have a kind of like a checkered history with this game on this podcast, as I was nearly burned at the stake for being some sort of heretic, calling out Splatoon as a fraud. And, you know, a fraudulent game and something that Nintendo was going to screw up horribly. When in reality, all I said was, you know, I had a very wait and see attitude towards this game.
It's just like we talked about with Mario Maker. We thought, all right, it looks cool. How are they going to screw this up?
Yes. So, and, you know, my big concern with it was not that, I mean, I knew that, you know, the gameplay would likely be, like I said, years and years and years ago, because this podcast has been going forever. I said, I wished that Nintendo would make a at the time, you know, a first-person shooter, a shooter of any kind, because I felt that they could do something really unique. And of course it would be good, because Nintendo doesn't make garbage games. They don't, you know, throw crap out there. They can make any game that they want in any genre, and it can be good. It's just what they focus on. So I think that Nintendo completely knocked that out of the park with this game. I think it was ingenious. And I think that it really brings that Nintendo flavor to the shooter arena. I think that, that the whole paint gun kind of thing is just, it's perfectly Nintendo. It's, you know, it just works so well coming from them. And the game is so fun to play that even if it didn't have all the trappings, at launch that other shooters on the market, have, it just that core gameplay of just splatting paint all over the place, shooting other people, having, you know, crazy paint gun battles. It's so fun to do. Just even just kind of like screwing around and really not even trying to win is just so fun that it just works. And,
well, if you're not trying to win, I don't want you on my team.
Well, hey, I've played with plenty of people. They don't seem like they want to win.
When I die, I want my Splatoon team at my funeral so they can let me down once again.
Is it fair to say, Joel, that like Mike Singletary, you want people that want to win?
Yes. Absolutely.
I will say this was the honorable mention that I didn't want to mention, because it's painfully apparent what my number one is, so I'm not worried about it now. like this game... You know, we talked about it when it came out. The game has style, and mm-hmm. we talked about a little bit about, like, we weren't. This game felt like somebody else made it, and it finally hit me when I was reading some of the Giant Bomb stuff for their Game of the Year. This feels like a Dreamcast game that's actually good.
Yeah.
Like, this feels like a Dreamcast game if Sega was good at making video games.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a, feels like a slight, but it's just like it feels and looks. Not Nintendo, but yet there's a certain veneer there on top of it that you're like, no, this is them. This is just
The gameplay sensibility is very Nintendo. The elegance with which you collapse things like, you know, traveling quickly,
right.
Reloading, you know, all that kind of stuff, all into one kind of mechanic is very Nintendo. That, you know, kind of boiling it down.
I think what blows me away is with this game, and the reason it didn't make my list, you know, it never got the hooks in to just keep me playing it all the time, which I think is a shame because I think I've missed out, and I do want to go back to it, is how they took this mechanic that was very clearly developed for this you know, the core gameplay. It's the you know, I can't remember what they call it, like ground control mode or whatever term they use for it is, the base Splatoon.
Turf War, yeah.
And then they went and they built two or three other gameplay modes. Some of them are similar. And then they built an entire single-player puzzle platforming campaign.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And they started.
And it's
adding,
really good.
Yeah,
it's
and
really
they added more game modes to boot. So yeah. That's kind of what I was. Yeah. One of my original comments is that the support that they've given this game has been phenomenal.
Yeah,
and that was my big worry. But they,
Rainmaker is really fun, and that came later. Like that is some of the most fun I've had with the game, and that was another addition. So
It's got style. It's got so much, like, it's a cool game.
It's really taken off. I mean, just in terms of kind of having a fan following and community around it, and sort of, I feel like the whole.
It's a Wii U game big in Japan.
Yeah. And
think
it's,
about
and
that
it's,
phrase. That
and
phrase
it's a
is
shooter.
Crazy.
A million sold.
Yeah.
That's
and
crazy.
In Japan alone. That,
where
on
sold
Wii U.
Three,
that is.
3 million Wii
yeah,
U's.
It's astonishing. On a console. Yeah. And I mean, it's really taken off. People have really latched onto the visuals of it. And just kind of, you know, just
the character, the music, they put out albums for this game now. Like it is to steal from the game, fresh as shit, yo.
Yeah, and I mean, people have really kind of, you know, embraced it. I mean, I feel like it's almost like kind of like a Pokemon thing where people, you know, they kind of, it's somewhat ironic the way they like it, but they love it just because it's so unique, you know, like they did a great job. And
they
I'm,
did.
I'm re-
they
I'm
did
really
a great
glad
job.
That they took this risk.
Yeah, absolutely. So Johnny's number two. I'm going to
number five for Johnny.
I'm going to get through one number, and I'm not going to screw it up for the entire chain. But I've only got one more chance at it, so we'll see. Johnny's number two game of 2015 is Elliot Quest. This bracingly difficult but immensely rewarding tribute to Zelda 2 is chock full of bosses, secrets, and platforming to scratch the same itches as La Mulana, Super Meat Boy, etc.
Yeah, I mean, I knew this would be on his list. I was just wondering where it would place because he really, really loved this game.
I'm surprised it's that high, but you're right. He really, really loves this game.
Yep.
He really, like, obsessively loves this game.
Yeah, and it seemed like he was actually surprised with it. He was surprised how much he liked it.
And now it is time for our favorite games of 2015. Shaquille and Bayette, what is your number one game of 2015?
Well, I want to assure John that there's nothing ironic about me choosing Splatoon as my number one game of 2015. I just loved it. I loved it way more than I thought I would. I am not the shooter guy. I have had trouble in the past with, just dealing with dual analog controls with shooters. It's just not something that I'm comfortable with. I don't find it very fast or accurate enough. And not that I'm really a PC snob, because I haven't been playing PC shooters either. But I am more comfortable with a keyboard and a mouse setup. But Splatoon really works. Like, it's got, you know, fast ZP controls, and I think that the gyro controls are a godsend because they really allow you to quickly aim up and down. And
great when you're doing what I was on about, where you just like frantically splashing the paint all over the place.
Yep.
You know, just that flexibility to be able to do that, I think it just makes it feel a lot more immediate than it would otherwise.
Yeah, and it's something, you know, that some console manufacturers, like I think Xbox, doesn't have any motion controls at all. I think it's a shame. It kind of means that I'm not going to bother, but then you've got the Steam controller, which has gyro, and people customize their own controls for various games. And yes, PC gamers have realized, oh, wait, the gyro controls are really, really useful for shooters. And so I'm glad that it's catching on, at least Nintendo fans and PC fans, and I hope that we see more of that. But yeah, beyond the controls that are really good, like we've already talked about it a lot, like it's a very elegant game, very simple mechanics that are very satisfying. You know, your run button is your reload button, is your hide button, and it's just I can't believe how smartly they just made everything. And as James mentioned, it's also secretly like probably the best third-person platformer that came out this year. You've got this small but really, really good first-person, third-person like platformer that's really, very satisfying, very Ratchet and Clank-esque. So if you like those games, I think you'll find a lot to like in the single-player of Splatoon. I wish it were longer, but...
There's a lot of mileage left in that, in my opinion. But
And I also kind of wish that they would bring more of the ideas of the single-player into future games, maybe, of Splatoon and the multiplayer. You know, the ink lines, the way that... You traverse the various single player levels. I think you could import a lot of those ideas into the multiplayer and make it an even more fun and hectic experience. Maybe it's a little bit too much to ask with the kind of the current infrastructure at Nintendo. Like the maybe it's too much. There's too much lag or something. I don't know. But I've already got a long wish list for Splatoon 2.
But a lot of the concepts that you develop. Like a lot of the skills you develop in the single player game can transfer over to very specific problem solving in the multiplayer.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like there's a lot of painting a wall and climbing challenges in the single player. You know, you'll have to get around these robots that clean up your paint, and you'll have to get around bombs and stuff like that. And it comes in handy, you know, like you're falling to your death in the multiplayer map, and you realize, oh wait, I'm close enough to the wall that I can paint it. And yes, okay,
yep.
Now I'm climbing back to safety. And it's just great. There's so much that you can do with these controls and this formula, and I think we've only barely scratched the surface. Like I think we've got a new franchise on our hands, and for a first entry in a new franchise, Splatoon is doing a lot of things right, and I just love it. And I just kind of wish that I had more time to play it. It's one of those games, again, like Super Mario Maker, that fell by the wayside, but I'm hoping I'll find more time to play this year.
Cool. Greg, What is your number one game?
Number one, Super Mario Maker. Obviously, we've talked about it plenty, so there's not a whole lot left to say. But yeah, I've ended up, you know, I haven't made anything in a while. I might have to make a shoot 'em up level now that they've got the hot rod.
I forgot about that. Yeah,
the hot rod Koopa car that's like just the clown car that's just for that seemingly. You know, I actually spent way more time making levels than I thought I would. And then in terms of the plague stuff, I mean, TYP's levels alone probably would have been worth me buying the game for. I've really enjoyed his stuff. There's loads of people that I've been following, you know, that keep bringing out fun levels. But, you know, now, especially, you know, there were issues, you know, with I was all right playing the 100 Marios and taking my chances and gonging a bunch of, patently unfair levels or, you know, not very enjoyable levels, but, you know, to get to things that I did enjoy. But certainly the bookmarking feature that you've now got with the web, portal is nice. You know, and you've got more information there. You can kind of look at, all the they might suggest levels for you, and you can look at the completion percentage and all that kind of stuff ahead of time. And, you know, you've got the tags now, like, oh, there's a Yoshi tag. I think that's, certainly very useful. But you've got other stuff like, you know, kind of auto scrolling tags, all that kind of stuff. So it's just, yeah, it probably should have been there at the beginning, but, I'm really glad it's there now. And this is something much like Splatoon that's gonna keep going, you know, and, I'd like to get back to creating some stuff in that spirit. And you've got the event courses now. I've enjoyed some of those, like the Captain Toad one, where it sort of challenged you to complete the level without jumping, which, yes. which I thought was cute. Also, TYP's most recent level, I think it's his most recent level, I really enjoyed. It's an homage to Blaster Master with the Mercedes Mystery Mushroom costume stuffed vertically into a Kiribo shoe. It's genius. It's funny. It's great. Like, if you haven't been, I'm sure if you find TYP on Twitter, he's probably tweeted out his bookmark page profile by now. So get on there, follow his levels, and you'll have a little less complaining to do about how you can't find good levels.
Yeah, I will say the other thing that's happened, at least when I got back in there, is that a lot of the crap that used to be at the top has sort of gone away. Like the people who are really good at making levels have built up the reputation now that just making auto players doesn't get you anymore. So the top levels now are really good.
Mm-hmm. Which is what you would expect over time, which is what's so great about the game.
If you haven't played it in a while, like you just got tired of the random levels, go back, because the top levels are really good. They're really good. Ugh. And I'm glad the Mercedes car is in there.
Yeah, that's just too funny.
Like it's such a great...
The Southwest Sky Pop. Now
wow.
you didn't know that the Sky Pop in Super Mario Land was actually a Southwest plane, but now we do.
Oh, that's amazing.
I'm just so glad that finally, like, I know that people have been griping, like, why isn't Super Mario Brothers 2 the version that we know in the North America?
Yeah.
Why is that not represented? But really, where was the Game Boy representation? And finally, we get some of it. I love that.
Yeah, I want the Wario sprite from 2, the boss sprite in it.
Ooh,
somewhere.
Yes.
That'd be great.
In black and white? Or
yeah,
and
oh
white?
Yeah, because the Sky Pop's in black and white, so I don't see why it wouldn't be.
Yeah, with the rabbit ears.
Perfect.
Oh, yeah.
So surprising no one, my number one game of the year is Legend of Legacy. I'm sorry, Xenoblade Chronicles X. This game, you know, I remember I imported Xenoblade Chronicles on the Wii and then just sat here and just made mouth sounds for 25 minutes trying to describe what I was playing. And I don't think I managed to utter an intelligent phrase once during the entire conversation.
Just like usual.
I was so sure John was going to say that.
Yeah. Worse, I think, happened with Xenoblade Chronicles X, because the game is so open and so broad that I when we came on and first started talking about it, I was kind of like, there's a lot going on here. Oh, I've only played 9 hours. I don't know what I'm doing. So I beat the game at about 109 hours in, and John had a particularly salient tweet at one point where he said that he was like 67 hours in and awash in a sea of question marks.
Yep.
And he's not wrong. So I basically went through and just like cleared everything before I went to fight the final boss. And
yeah, I had a similar thing, because especially because Seren said about the fact that you need to like block out quite a lot of time to do it.
Right.
So, and all that, like I was like, well, I want to do it in front of the TV. I don't want to do that, on a gamepad only. But that's gonna, you know, I need to make sure I'm not gonna like get three quarters of the way through and then do something else. So I kind of just ended up stalling, like doing all sorts of stuff off TV play for ages before I got round to it, and it kind of made the end ridiculously easy.
But, so, yeah, so, I did the same thing before that purpose. Exactly.
Yeah. So what's funny is, when I was doing these quests, not because I was trying to grind for level.
I was doing it for fun. I mean,
yeah, I was grinding, baby.
I was fairly confident that the hitting power I was about to bring down on the Ganglion was to such an extreme force that, like, shit was gonna get fast.
My Bill's colored mech is the Death Star now.
There you
it's
go.
Great. Yeah. You just fly around and just hover over an enemy target.
But what's amazing is how that game just scales constantly. So I said I beat it at 109 hours, and then I went and did all this other post game stuff because I can't, like, I just can't get away from that game. Like, yesterday was the first time I went a full day and didn't touch it since the telethon.
Yeah, I mean, that's
what we're talking about. Like,
yeah, I played it every day for 27 days straight.
Yeah,
and I beat it, and I'm like, okay, cool. All right, cool. I'm done with it. And probably about 2 hours later, I was playing it again. I was playing it again that night because I knew there was just more stuff I could do.
We won't get into the ending or anything, but I don't really feel like the once you beat it, it's like, I don't know, it just doesn't really feel like that's the end of the game.
No,
it's just like,
you just
if you feel like you want to keep exploring stuff, then you just do
it. So I'm at 134 hours now, which means I've added a whole extra day,
mm-hmm.
like a full day to my game save since I beat the game. Also, I beat the game like a week and 2 days ago.
Yeah.
So that means like a full ninth of my life since I beat the game. Keeping in mind, I didn't play it yesterday.
Yeah, I mean,
was devoted to post game, yeah. Like like after as you said, the ending, it doesn't seem to resolve. Like even after that, I was like, ah.
Yeah, I mean, I beat it at 118 hours, and I feel like I could probably put 30 more hours into it easily.
What's amazing about this game is that this game exists three times. Like the world exists three times. So when you're playing the game on foot for the first 50 hours, everything is huge, everything is deadly, you don't want to fight anything, you're terrified all the time, you're running, you're hiding, you're trying to get around enemies, you see a Simius and you shit yourself because you think, that thing is going to eat me.
Yep.
And then the second area the game gives you is just all of that, mm-hmm. just constantly, and you're just like, I don't want to die, I don't want to do this. And then you get your skill. And you get this skill and you think, I am now a badass.
Mm-hmm.
And then you find out your skill kind of sucks shit. Like, your first skill is actually kind of awful.
Yeah.
But now you can jump. You have this ridiculous jump and it lets you climb hills you hadn't been able to climb before and get to new places.
Yep.
And then these enemies that had been big are at least roughly the same size as you. Now, there are still enemies that are still gigantic. But your whole vision cone shifts. Like, you've kind of reoriented the game world.
Yep.
And then when you can fly, the first time you get, when you're on the mission to get the flight pack, and you fly out of New LA, like you walk out, you open the doors to the test hangar, and you walk out of it, and there's no loading time. And you just fly straight up, because that's what the game tells you to do. Actually, the game doesn't tell you to do anything, it just tells you to go to this place.
Yep.
But you just naturally fly up, and you fly over the wall of New LA.
And you just keep flying, baby.
Whereas you had been going on through these deep, dark tunnels that had been like, because New LA is essentially a fortress, and you'd just been going through these deep, dark, these deep tunnels, these sally points. It's where they'd been basically were designed for defensive purposes, and they're long, and they're just, it feels so disconnected from the world. You go into New LA, and it's just this totally different place. New LA feels so different than the game world.
Feels so much smaller.
I think it's a triumph.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like a city. I mean, it feels like an LA that's not awful, and which of course makes it a video game. So, but then you go over the wall, and you just keep going.
Yeah.
And you realize, like, oh my god, this game world is enormous. Like, you've known it because it took you forever to get anywhere.
Yeah, and all you saw leading up to that was stuff that you couldn't get to.
Right, or all you saw was what was in front of your face. But now, you're suddenly able to just go. The story being what it is, you know, it's not super story-driven, but I think that sells the game world-building short. Because there are, I think, 12 party characters, and each of them has their own thing, and as you get to know them and develop the affinity, do their affinity quests, do their heart-to-heart stuff, I've gone and maxed out 5 characters that I had basically nothing with since I beat the game. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, there's all these theories that I want to talk about this story, like who these characters are, like how their roles are played, like all the weird mysteries of this game. This game is full of mysteries.
So yeah, we'll definitely have to do spoiler cast.
But, yeah, we should.
What I say in general is that I kind of like just some of the fact that some of the quests, you know, not necessarily quests that were singled out as being important, kind of just filled in things like, you know, they're bad people.
Yes.
You know, with you, you know, not only did you preserve coffee shops and pizza, but you know, you preserved everything of humanity. Like there are pricks.
There are
amoral people and greedy people and all that kind of, you know, I suppose, you know, inevitably perhaps for the game, xenophobic people.
Yes.
So they kind of surpassed my expectations a little way. Not in like a core narrative way, but just in, yeah, like you said, that world building, like this is the place that you're in with the people that are in that place.
I love how if you're a quest hound, you will completely change New LA. You will remake that city in a completely unique way, and you will literally change the fate of the whole planet. Not just in the gameplay standpoint, but like you will change the dynamics of Mira if you just quest hound. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, Mira probably stays pretty homogenous. Mira or New LA probably stays fairly homogenous. It doesn't change a whole lot. You don't gain access to a lot of stuff. You don't get these weird stories, the like Back to the Future homages. And you don't get to meet these characters that are really, like, so there's a bunch of mysteries about what happened that I've been toying with my head a lot. And then one of the characters, I got their last affinity quest and it ended and they got the mission complete. And then another, like after the credits style movie, you know, a lot of games have like that after the credits stinger. There was one after his quest, you know, his quest complete pop up. And suddenly, like, a million new theories about what the hell's going on in this world popped up from just this one random character's affinity quest. It's so perfectly positioned. Like, if you hadn't beaten the game at that point and you took that knowledge in, you would have thought of the mysteries of this game in a completely different way. And I got to see them transformed by just interacting with a dude in my party who likes to shoot stuff. It's, God, this is a good game. God, this is a really good game. I'm sorry, I went way too long. I apologize. John, what is your number one game?
Well,
here?
James, let's go a bit longer, buddy, because it's Xenoblade Chronicles X.
Yeah! I gotta feel so bad now.
I won't belabor it, but man, I played the living hell out of this game.
Oh.
I think it borrows from, I mean, for me, I was thinking about this, and it is.
It borrows a lot.
I hate saying it's my perfect game. I don't think it's certainly not perfect. It has a lot of.
So there's Monster Hunter in there for you.
Well, yeah. I'll run down the list. Monster Hunter is definitely in there. I mean, this is
especially
the kind of,
especially if you're playing like a Harrier, because yes. it's all about just effing up big giant monsters.
Yep, and also just the way the game looks to me is very Monster Hunter-ish. It just has a look to it. And you know, there's elements of, like we talked about, kind of the sort of scale or scaling gameplay that reminds me of like Metroid, where you know you can get someplace, or you know, but you know you have to unlock something to get there, but you can't quite see it, sort of thing. And the way that the game world keeps exploring as you get more equipment is very Metroid-ish. Also, you know, it reminds me of, you know, stuff like World of Warcraft, like actual MMOs, where one of the strengths of that genre is that you never run out of stuff to do. There's always, even if you just feel like playing for a half an hour, you can, you know, jump into the game, run a mission, run a quest, you know, find like a segment on the map that you haven't really explored. Go around, look for artifacts, you know, hunt a tyrant. There's always just something.
There's
to
something
do.
You can do.
Yep. Find unexplored stuff. Find sightseeing areas. And it's just, it's fun. And that's why it's like, you know, like I said, you know, I was 67 hours in and I was awash in a sea of red question marks. And even with that, if you get bored of doing quests, you can just roam around. You can drop something
around.
And just go off for 2 hours just planting nodes, you know?
Yeah. I did a 21 game days expedition through Oblivia.
Yeah.
Like the equivalent of 21 game days, and I didn't go back to town. I didn't warp. I just wandered.
Yep. Yeah, I did the same thing.
And it was the coolest effing thing ever.
Yeah, it was so fun. I mean, when I got my flying scale, I was just like, okay, I'm gonna drop as many nodes as I can. And you know, I mean, at no point in that game, even when I was grinding, because what I did is I did missions to effectively grind from like level 43 is when I got chapter 11, 12 chapters. I did missions from 43 to 50, didn't get the result I wanted when I went after the final boss at 50. And then at level 50, I found a couple of grind places and I grinded from 50 to 60. But even that wasn't bad. Like, at no point did I ever feel like the game was tedious or really wasting my time. There were a couple of annoying things with like scale insurance and stuff like that that really made me kind of ragey, just because it's pretty stupid and punitive, where it doesn't have to be punitive.
A game that's so not punitive.
Yeah, exactly. And encourages you to actually just kind of screw around. The scale insurance stuff kind of punishes you for screwing around.
I kind of like the fact that the scales were expensive and the stuff mm-hmm. for them was expensive, because it made that economy stuff that I mentioned earlier matter more.
Yeah,
but right. I still don't know whether the way
I
they
wish you could buy back in on your insurance.
Well, yeah, like they. Yeah, I think they could have handled it a bit better.
Yeah,
I think that's probably where that intent comes from.
Yeah, know, or make it a little bit harder, a little bit easier to drop aggro when a level 90 tyrant just happens to wander by and you kind of pull it accidentally.
Yeah, like,
because
like,
your back is to it and you don't even know it's there. And
yeah,
it one
like,
shots your entire party.
Like a Zadon.
The
Zadons
camera,
just don't like scales.
The camera in scale battles is not rock solid.
Yeah,
no, it's frenetic.
Yep. But I mean, all that being said, I mean, man. I mean, this game, I just could not. Once I started playing this thing, once I hopped on the train, man, I was like, I'm riding this thing all the way, even if it goes off a cliff. We're going there. And it's like, I just like every, I mean, every night, I mean, I would come home from work, pop that game in, and I would play that thing for 4 hours. And next night, same thing. And I was just like, do, 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 you know, just very, very easy to play. I mean, I even think, you know, games that are really good, you know, stuff like Skyward Sword, even, where, there's certain points, you know, in that game where, you know, I kind of fell off the rails just because it was just kind of tedious. Like, just never felt that here. Really enjoyed it all the way through.
It's really good.
And, you know, at the end, I mean, ironically, I think that the end game part is actually probably where it starts to get more grindy, because that, at that point, it gets completionist. Like, I want to, like, you know, this guy needs 5 hearts. I want to see all of his heart-to-hearts. So, you know, that's where it gets kind of hardcore, and where you really want to push it, and just where you do stuff just to accomplish something.
Or you wander onto a quest line that the game meant for you to find, like in chapter 2.
Yeah.
And suddenly, like every time you hit the quest, it's like, there's another one, here's another one, here's another one. Because they meant you to play those over the course of the whole game, not in a row.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're like, not like they disappear, then reappear in exactly the same spot. But I'm like, God, since we last talked,
you don't even know where I've been.
That was like 12 seconds ago, bro.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, I haven't really enjoyed. I think this is probably the first time I've enjoyed a JRPG this much, or actually just played it so rabidly since probably Final Fantasy VII, and that's like 20 years ago. I mean, so this is up there with that for me, where I just said, not only am I going to beat this game, I'm going to obsessively play it until I do absolutely everything in the game, because I want to see everything. Because when you beat the game, that's really only the beginning of, you know, you want to see how far you can take it at that point, because you enjoy everything, you know, building your skill and seeing what your characters can do. But then you're like, wow, you know, that particle cannon that I have on my skill, there's actually 2 more levels above that. So
that's idiocy.
And really, I just need some credits to do that. And the credits wouldn't take that long to get. Maybe if I grind over here. And it's just, you get into that mentality where it's just like, you just want to see how much of a god level team that you can build. So
yeah.
Yeah, not a bad game, that Xenoblade Chronicles X. And
so
my game of the year.
We went really long, and I am deeply sorry. We had so many games to talk about, many games we hadn't really talked about on the show or hadn't talked about in a while. Well, that's it for our top five. Did anybody have any?
What was Johnny's number one?
Oh my God, you're right. I think it was. Hold on. I said I was gonna go one whole segment and not screw it up, but then we had a whole new business segment about friggin' Xenoblade Chronicles X. Johnny's number one was Super Mario Maker. I still can't believe Nintendo brought this dream game into reality, complete with an ingenious, fun level editor and a nostalgia-driven chaos engine to rival even Smash Brothers.
Yeah, I've thoroughly enjoyed how Johnny is sort of a used car dealer in this scenario.
Yeah, did anybody have any? Did anybody have any honorable mentions that they had kept for spoiler reasons?
Well. Yeah, so Yoshi's Woolly World, I think for the reasons, for the reservations that Greg had, I did not pick it in my top five. It's a really, really well-made game, but it comes a little too late, in my opinion. I wish we had gotten a good Yoshi's Island sequel on the N64.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah,
no,
that was a dig. That was a dig.
I won't fight you on it.
That baby game. And, yeah, other than that.
Baby Yoshi game, you mean?
He's all hardcore in this episode. You know?
Also, Xenoblade Chronicles, I'm starting Chapter 7, so I'm not as far as you guys.
Yeah,
but
you get the skill. You got that skill yet?
I did. And it's kind of the most disappointing thing I've ever seen.
Oh, hang in there, buddy.
Your first skill is kind of garbage.
It's kind of garbage. Oh, God. Man, wait till you get the flying skill.
Yeah, so while I'm really feeling the addiction, I don't think it's a good thing at all. Like, I want to keep doing all these side quests and stuff, but I felt like I was enjoying myself more doing the side quests in the original Xenoblade. And in this one, I kind of feel like I keep doing the same things. You know, I talk to this guy, I go to Oblivia, I kill these creatures, or I look at this wreckage and creatures arrive and I kill them. And then I go back to town and, you know, I'm sent again. And
it is very fetch questy.
I will say, if you get bored with doing that for a while and you just want to go back to the story, that's fine because the quests don't go away.
You'll just end up being way over these monsters. Yeah, but then you have to explore like 30% of this area before you can do the next quest.
For me, that was the game, though.
I really didn't
mind that being tied to story mission requirements at all, because that was what...
To me, that was more
important than the story.
Anyway, so I did not want to crap on Xenoblade too much. I'm going to do that in the spoiler cast, I guess.
Another mention,
my Nintendo. I haven't played a lot of non-Nintendo game this year, that came out this year anyway. But I am halfway through Life is Strange, and A+, I'm really enjoying it. The writing in the first episode is rough, but it gets better. It gets funny on purpose. And,
yeah, they drop a lot. They got the emails about, like, don't say, go fuck your selfie. Like... They shot collared whoever wrote that line until they stopped doing it.
And in general, like Life is Strange is kind of what I wish the Telltale games were. The pacing is better somehow. The puzzles don't get in the way as much, and you do less mindless back and forth. Because they take the good design decision of making you stay in an area, in the area where you need to be.
So that will do it for our top five games and ones of the year. 2005, a lot of really cool games came out. You know, we talked about there was a big
gap. I thought 2005 kind of sucked, to be honest.
Sorry, 2015. God damn it, I'm tired. Look, all right, I did a bad job hosting, okay? I'm sorry.
It's the podcast, people.
Do you want to host, John?
No,
do you want to do that?
Hey, man, I'm always available for hosting. Hey, let's party.
Jesus Christ. All right, so we went really long on this segment. We are going to do our prediction segment. We're going to be brisk. Lightning speed predictions.
Thunder round.
Famous ass words.
Thunder predictions. And we are going to do that after the break. We probably will have stuck a break somewhere in this segment because it's really freaking long. I don't know. We'll figure it out. Oh, we'll be back after this.
I apologize for nothing.
Now playing, a sampling of the best new original content at NintendoWorldReport.com. It's the new year, and I'm starting it off the way I ended the last one, all alone. Because John just sent me a script, and then said, hey buddy, I gotta catch a plane, see you later! So I'm doing Now Playing by myself. This is the saddest thing that could ever happen in an episode of RFN. I apologize in advance. But first up this week, we have a feature, Don's Top 10 eShop Games of 2015. The new year wouldn't be complete without a top 10 list about the old year, and trusty old Don is here to provide separate lists for both Wii U and 3DS. More Kuso Gay for your Kuso Doll! Oh, sorry. That's a different top 10 list. You know, I'm not sure why John feels like it's funny to make fun of top 10 lists since we spent like 14 hours in the last segment trying to do a top 5 list, so joke's on us, I guess. We also have a video. Planet GameCube E3 2001 video. Want to experience the announcement of the GameCube at E3 2001? We know you do. Take a trip back in time and see what it was like when everybody was young and naive, as opposed to jaded, cynical bastards that you listen to on this podcast every week. I'd like to point out that John was not, in fact, young and naive in 2001. He was old and calcified, but regardless, it's his script, and he's not here to defend himself, so I won't make old jokes about how old he is. Also this week, we have a preview, Box Boy, Another Box, on 3DS by Neil Ronahan. Neil takes a look at the currently Japan-only sequel to Box Boy and gives his first impressions on the very beginning of the game. See if it's the complete package and how it stacks up to the original. John, these are awful. John, what are you doing to me? Anyway, lastly this week, we have a feature, Neil's Top 25 Games of 2015. It's another Neil Ronahan joint as he haikus his way down the top 25 games of the past year. Yes, haikus. It's a verb now, thanks to Neil. All this and more transforming forms of poetry into verbs is available to you right now, this second, in the year 2016, as we are now in that year, at NintendoWorldReport.com. That was a long segment, but we're back for the downside of this episode. I mean, it's not downside. This is supposed to be fun. We're giving predictions, and we make jokes. You know, we have a running joke that we're abysmal at predictions. I don't think we're actually any worse than anybody else.
I mean, I predicted Minecraft last year, did I not? Let's
find out. Did you predict Minecraft last year?
I did, but I'm wondering if I did it for the E3 predictions. I predicted it.
You might have. I have our predictions at the start of last year. We were joined by Mr. Chris Kohler, and of course, Dr. Metz was still here at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So
the good doctor.
Chris predicted no detailed talk of new Nintendo platform in 2015, although the regular new 3DS will come out in North America in 2015, and more new 3DS exclusive games, 3 to 5 retail games, and Wii ports to new 3DS. So he hit on...
Two out of three, yeah.
The exclusive new 3DS games did not come. Number two, Nintendo will post a profit for fiscal year ending March 2015. Yes. Then they will post a loss in quarter one of 2016. I don't remember. And then the Wii U hardware will see a decline in sales year over year. The Wii U will see a non-effectual price cut. 2016 will see the Wii U year of slog, the unspoken prediction of Zelda Wii U delayed to the year 2016. Yeah, I mean, yes, it was delayed. I don't remember if these sales declined year over year because they had some hits that we weren't expecting. Relative to where it's been, it wasn't a bad year. And then his lightning round was, get ready to hear a lot about Nintendo's quality of life initiative. New Metroid is a quality of life chosen statue, curl up in a ball and get into. Well, just whiffs all around. John.
Yeah.
John, are you ready for this?
Lay it on me, brother.
Club Nintendo replacement will use Nintendo Network account. An application on the Wii U and 3DS will have Amiibo support for credit in the new loyalty program. So it uses Nintendo account. So I'll give you a tiny partial credit on that one.
Yeah. We'll see something on the NX that maybe, I don't know.
Yeah. Number two, new Metroid Prime game for Wii U. New story arc, 2015's year, we find out what's going on with Metroid. Not in 2015.
But I mean, at this point,
I'm not done yet, sir. Reboot or distance from Wii Metroid games. Oh, a Prime game for 3DS or new 3DS? Well, I mean, to be fair.
Hold on a second. I think I said that. I believe, if I remember correctly, that I put the caveat in front of that I don't expect any of that to happen, but at this point, it's just more of a wish list that I do just just
to
because.
To be fair, though, you actually
I must,
got,
out of protest.
You got your Metroid Prime 3DS, so I don't want to hear it. The Metroid Prime game we can't talk about. And your lightning round was Splatoon tournaments and a world championship. Yeah. Guillaume.
Yes.
Number one. Virtual console moniker fades away. Repackaging of classic games a la NES Remix. New Kirby's Dream Land and new Super Mario Brothers. I mean, it did fade away, but...
That was just more of a gag to get new Super Mario Brothers.
I know. Yes. Yes. And then
that's going to be a theme with this.
Yeah,
recap.
And then your serious prediction: glitter art style for the Metroid series. Metroid is a sparkling vampire, Sparkle Samus, and a glitter gun.
Yes,
which we did get. And then your lightning round. And then your lightning round. You had already blown your load.
Yeah, basically.
The Doctor, who's not here. A new model of Wii U. Nope. That cuts manufacturing costs. Nope. More storage. Nope. Launches alongside Zelda Wii U, double nope, and a new Wii U gamepad? No.
Although what a way to go out.
I don't know. I did feel like the... because the nephew-in-law got a Wii U for Christmas, I did feel like they're shipping it with a different gamepad. Like, the bottom seems to be more textured, and unfortunately I didn't have my gamepad for comparison, but it just seemed kind of lighter.
Hmm.
It's definitely not a new like real model. If it is iteration,
right? Yeah, and maybe I just like I've worn off my gamepad so much. Yeah, it used to be more textured, and now it's just
it's been
soft.
For like 3 years now, and yeah.
Platinum Games. Like Platinum Games is working on a classic Nintendo franchise. Oh, not Star Fox. Oh,
no, he did say it was Star Fox.
No, he said Star Fox, and then he backed it off. And said, well, maybe.
No, oh, okay, yeah, well, I thought it was Cola that said it wouldn't be Star Fox, and he was wrong.
But, I'm working off somebody else's notes, I'm not sure.
Maybe Johnny waffled a bit, but I think in the end he kind of felt like it could be Star Fox, and Cola disagreed.
And then we had some conversation, and apparently at some point between he and Chris, they settled that Team Ninja might get another crack at Metroid.
That was Cola was pushing
okay.
that idea.
Right? Okay, and then in the lightning round, a new multi-platform Zombie U game. Well, I mean...
Well, Zombie came out on other systems.
Yes, it did.
It did.
So it was that.
But that's not new.
No, certainly not. And he did actually say something about, I believe, Twilight Princess maybe getting a remake on new 3DS in 2016. So it wasn't like a proper prediction. It was kind of thrown in at the end, I think.
Yeah.
But he was getting close on that one.
And then mine, number
one.
And
I believe in a previous year, Johnny said that they would reveal a Metroid that no one wanted.
There you go.
Like that was like not last year's predictions, but some other year. And it kind of came true, debatably, eventually.
All right, now it's my turn. Somebody's got to hold down the fort here. Number one, DS games on 3DS eShop, maybe new 3DS exclusive. Don't! But I have been predicting this for a while now, so eventually I would hope to get it right, but I'm going to stop. Yeah. And number two, promotional stages DLC for Super Smash Bros. For Wii U and Nintendo 3DS. Super Smash Bros. DLC in general. So
Mario Maker stage kind of fulfills that. Didn't happen. I thought it might happen more. Like, I'm amazed we didn't get something more Splatoon based than just the Mii costumes.
I mean, you have their Fire Emblem one that they explicitly said.
You do have the Fire Emblem character. Yeah,
which they explicitly said was promotional intention. So
yeah, although that game is already out in Japan,
it's a little different
for different regions. But
right.
Yeah.
And then Lightning was GameCube games to do 3DS. And that was where Johnny threw in Twilight Princess 3.
Yeah.
So I whiffed, and then he specifically whiffed, whereas I generally whiffed, which is cool. Okay, so prediction time. Because we went super long on our top five, we're going to be...
It's almost like there's one of these that we'd rather do than the other, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I know. We're gonna be quick. We're going to be brisk, and we're going to start. Everybody's going to give... And an X prediction, if you have one.
Yeah, we've all got some, surely.
Yeah.
So let's
yeah,
get
yeah,
them
yeah,
all
yeah.
out.
So, I'm going to call out the order. John, you are first. Give me your NX hot takes.
Okay, my hot take for NX is that it will release in November with Super Mario Galaxy 3.
Whoa!
Oh, no, I didn't have Galaxy 3 as a launch game, but that is a prediction. I don't know whether it would literally be called Galaxy 3, but it will be a 3D Mario game, very much in that vein, you know, rather than the 3D Land World style.
Yep. Just took a look at what Tokyo is doing in terms of big term projects over since that release in 2010, and it's you know, they've had a little bit of capacity, so they're working on something.
Yeah, I think so, but I would be surprised if indeed the system makes it, then if that game were to come with it, I think it would be more of a 2017.
So I had this as 2016 is the year of not 2D platformers. I feel like Koizumi's team will have something, because this is the year where Nintendo's like, all right, we really overdid it.
I'm quite confident it will be shown at E3, and it will be one of the big, you know, the big like wow kind of moments of that show. It will look wonderful, yeah. and it'll be exciting. But whether it, you know, they might aim for it to come out this year, they might aim for the system to come out this year. I mean, my prediction would be that it's definitely coming out in some form. Whether it's good, there might be subsequent like other devices in the family release down the line or something, but in some form it will come out in this fiscal year,
which takes it through March.
I think it's a toss up whether it makes it into the calendar year or like 3DS ends up in like February, March of 2017, you know, where that was February, March 2011. Like I said, I think they're probably hoping to get it out in November, but I'm not. Yep. I think it's almost 50-50 whether it actually gets there. But come hell or high water, that fiscal year, it's coming out.
I mean, maybe they could release the handheld version of it this year, the handheld part of it.
Well,
and maybe
that
a console
again,
part of it next year.
That's probably
is a prediction. So Guillaume, yeah. What is your NX prediction?
Well, I did not have one.
Oh, then you're fine.
I can come up with one though. I mean, so I think that I can predict. I think that I can predict what the NX's final name is.
What's that?
It's kind of like, you know, in 2001, A Space Odyssey. HAL is
new
really
HAL.
Like kind of one letter offset. Like if you go the subsequent letter, you get IBM, right? So if you do the same thing with NX, you get Yo. So it's
Nintendo Yo.
Nintendo Yo next
Great.
Year. Yes.
Thank you, Yo.
Yep.
Thank you. I appreciate it. So my I'm just trying to keep alive here. My prediction for the NX is that
I was so sure with that pause it was going to be pain.
Pain. my prediction for the NX is that Western publishers will not be immediately involved with the platform, not because they don't like what they see, but because they don't have an active relationship with Nintendo. Of course, the Star Waltz will be there, and maybe one.
So, I mean, how much Ubisoft talks?
Yeah, well,
like,
Ubisoft will be there because Ubisoft doesn't know any better.
How many times are they going to get burned? Like, you know, like they got burned on Wii U, like even 3DS, even they backed off.
Well,
pretty
yeah,
damn
so
fast.
So I think. Somewhat, you know, Activision will be there because of Skylanders. But I think the Japanese publishers, the ones that are still deep in the console, your Bamcos, your Tecmo Koeis, your I don't want to say Capcom right out the gate, just because Capcom's in kind of a weird position, but potentially Capcom, so I said Bamco, Tecmo Koei, your Segas, your Square Enixes. I think those companies that are currently not tooled to make mobile games and feel that they are financially, it would be financially not advantageous for them to jump because of the costs and development training they would have to do to move to those places, and possibly just for professional reasons don't want to go there, want to see a resurgence of a vibrant console community in the Japanese video game space. And you see that in their conversations. They talk about it. You know, they sent out the the poll from, why am I blanking on the big Japanese
Famitsu?
Yeah, the Famitsu, you know, questions they asked the publisher or maybe
the survey,
yeah.
Media
and creator. Like they're all talking about like they want to see the resurgence of the Japanese console space. And I think part of the reason you see Square Enix jumping the gun on NX, and part of the reason you see these other big Japanese companies talking about this is A, they see the weakness of the platforms in Japan. And it was bad last cycle, it's worse this cycle. And the other thing is they don't want to be beholden to Sony exclusively. They want there to be at least two viable home console options they can deal with. And so for them, they will want to support Nintendo just to make sure they don't get A, just in a dead market and not tooled to migrate to places that are mobile, you know, despite mobile being the land of milk and honey, is actually incredibly risky and a very difficult place to thrive. And B, they don't want to be stuck with one player who gets to dictate everything. So I think you'll see, as long as they can, I think you will see them actively support NX as a platform, if only because they want to play both sides of the fence. I think in the West, they have the Xbox One to rely on, so they won't feel quite so motivated there. So, predictions that aren't NX. Greg, what's your first non-NX prediction?
Yeah, well, one thing I want to bet, it's a little bit NX, but it's more of its own thing. But I think they would really be missing an opportunity if, at least, you know, hopefully at the end of the year, but it might be a bit soon, if they could get a Splatoon game like on the handheld NX, I think that would be huge. Because as we touched on this before, the million sold in Japan on Wii U, I think, is underestimated in terms of how sensational that performance is. That is shocking. As you said, the 1 in 3
right.
attach rate for a new IP in a genre that we generally think Japanese gamers don't like.
Yes.
It is astonishing. And I think there is, to quote Matt Damon in Interstellar, there is a moment, and I forget what happens after that. But anyway, the point is, there's something happening here. You know, this could be humongous if they play their cards right. And I really think getting it, you know, it might have to change. It might not. I mean, we've talked about the idea of, oh, Splatoon, you could probably just like kind of, you know, this whole idea of it being kind of like a ongoing servicey thing. You know, you kind of upport it to NX and, you know, just keep providing new content. Also, I mean, I guess it could be that. Maybe, you know, technically that might be a bit difficult and it might have to be something else in the Splatoon franchise that's like got, you know, tailored for different things or something that the hardware can do. I don't know, but I think they should move quickly to capitalize on this because it really could be something, the start of something far bigger in Japan anyway.
So I'm going to go out of order because I have a Splatoon related prediction that I think dovetails nicely. By the end of 2016, Nintendo will be all in on Splatoon. With they've talked about, you know, their licensing deals. I think they'll do DLC, paid DLC. They said it's the end of the free updates is in January.
Yeah.
They did not say the end of updates is in January. I would, and you know, they've gone all in on DLC now. Not all in, but they've gone in. I think Splatoon DLC makes sense. I think we've already seen kind of leaks and hints that they've built in the stuff that they could sell you. But I think more pressingly, Nintendo will begin to license the fact that that thing has some effing style, especially in Japan where it is remarkably popular from a stylistic standpoint. I think you've already seen some albums. I think you'll start to see the potential for, you know, as in, you know, TV or movie products or, you know, some kind of media, like consumable media produced using the license. I think you'll see clothes, specifically like at a retailer like Uniqlo, who signs a licensing deal to make clothes in this, about this game that is all about frickin' clothes. Like, because what's weird is they've already got a partnership for their I can't remember what that franchise they have, basically about running a clothing store.
Star Savvy.
But those already have licensed clothes from major Japanese clothing retailers in it. Like, I could totally see them signing a license to make clothes based on Splatoon, because guess what? Those are already in that game. Like, they've already thought about this. But, you know, all kind of, I think license deals for Splatoon are inevitable in Japan. And I think right now Nintendo might be thinking if they could retool one of their mobile apps to have some Splatoon veneer. Because I think that would do really, you know, could do really well for them. Guillaume, what is your next prediction?
Well, a correction. It wouldn't be the Nintendo Yo. It would be the Nintendo Oi. So, small correction here.
I don't know if that gives the image they want to carry.
I don't know. They would be aiming squarely at the UK stereotype.
Yes,
market,
so that's right. the London market trader. So
my prediction is based, I'm extrapolating on a trend here. We've seen fewer and fewer virtual console games. Actually, there's nothing being released now virtual console-wise on the 3DS.
There are three NES Zapper games.
On the 3DS.
On the 3DS, yeah.
But they are keeping those games, they are still releasing them on the Wii U. And they're even releasing handheld games, GBA games, on the Wii U. So, I think we can extrapolate from this that in 2016, Nintendo will announce a 3DS game exclusively for the Wii U.
Yep, that makes sense to me.
That's where we're headed.
Joe's going to win predictions when we do the review next year, and we're all just going to cry. We're going to cry uncontrollably. John, what is your second prediction?
My second prediction is that we will finally see a new animated Super Mario Brothers movie announced.
Mm.
Now, if you remember the Sony hack of 2014, there were emails going back and forth about how Sony Pictures are the ones that apparently own the rights to it or are trying to get the rights to it. Emails going back and forth between producers, directors, that kind of stuff about trying to get an animated movie, how they're talking to Nintendo about it. And it's kind of fallen off the radar, but I believe this year you will see a good movie announced for Super Mario
Brothers.
Well,
and you know the...
But it will be animated. It'll be like, you know, Pixar or whoever, Sony, whatever Sony's...
DreamWorks.
You know.
The other thing that came out of that email is that Spider-Man deal finally got done. The Spider-Man in the Marvel movies deal. And I think in no small part because Disney saw those emails and said, man, they fucking need us, don't they?
Yeah. And also Nintendo seems to be licensing their stuff out a lot more
with
now.
Theme parks and stuff, yeah.
Yep.
Oh, they've been quite open about the fact they want to leverage it more in those. So, I mean, that's certainly a possibility.
Yeah. Greg, what is your third prediction?
Well, someone better have an Amiibo-based prediction, because it's going to be one of Guillaume's facetious ones.
Actually, when I was writing these up, I was like, I am not going to do an Amiibo one. Screw
Amiibo will take over Seattle.
Yeah, well, actually, on that, so I did have one facetious prediction, which was Project's God, a giant robot, will achieve sentience and destroy 70% of the human population before being given a specific release date. That's my joke prediction. It's the 20th anniversary of Pokemon this year.
Yep.
Obviously, we're kind of going to be starting off with the Virtual Console releases, and in Japan, they're getting the 2DS because there's finally the killer app for it, which is the Virtual Console releases of Pokemon Red, Blue, and Green.
20-year-old
and
game.
And Yellow. I think that's only going to be the beginning of the Poképalooza that awaits us this year. And I guess last year was quite unusual for not having a significant regular Pokemon game for the first time in quite a while. So, I mean, we're definitely going to see one this year. I'm not sure whether it would be like a Pokemon third version.
Well, you know, I mean, we're due a Z. Like, there are Pokemon you cannot get.
Well, last time it was Black 2, White 2, so it could be X2, Y2.
Well, the legendaries in X and Y start with X and Y, and there's a Z that you can't get right now. So, you got to think
that's going to happen. Some sort of, you know, updated version of that could happen. Probably too soon for, like, the next generation or whatever. But I do think you could well see... that launch in its respective editions, you know, if for instance it were X2 Y2, where you might have two editions of it and a different amiibo pack for each one, and the amiibo would have some sort of ancillary sort of functions. You know, it could be like a starter Pokemon from one of those games, and if you use it, the Pokemon will walk around with you, you know, on the screen. You could do stuff with that Pokemon Ami, for, you know, the virtual pet type of integration. Superfluous stuff, like I said. Nothing too, you know, functionality-wise too huge, but, you know, to be honest, obviously you've got the Smash Brothers Pokemon or Amiibo, but I am astonished that Amiibo's gone this long without really exploiting Pokemon.
Well, yeah, it's the Pokemon company licenses.
Yeah, I assume the licensing and the, you know, the kind of somewhat autonomous nature of it, but at some point that surely, you know, it's got to get done.
Money is money.
It seems like it's just, you know, I mean, it would seem ridiculous to me that we could get Pokemon games coming out without Amiibo bundles, whereas Twilight Princess HD is going to have one. You know, I just think that doesn't make any kind of business sense if we live in that world. So, I think it's probably pretty safe, to be honest. But, like I said, I can't see them wanting to make it too integral to the game, though. I know Kimishima has said that, you know, they want to make it more valuable in that way, but I still think they could be a bit timid about that, because they probably think, especially with Pokemon, that the people will want the figure for itself, and, you know, to a large extent.
Well, and that's probably partially motivated by the fact that the Animal Crossing amiibo line didn't do great, but because he's only integrated really with one game, are you really that surprised? So, Guillaume, what is your third prediction?
Haven't I done enough? okay, well, scrambling to find something to release on the 3DS, Nintendo will go and remake a DS game that got overlooked for release in North America, Tingle's Rosy Rupee Land.
God damn it.
And they're going to give it the full Pokemon treatment by having two versions, and they're going to replace Tingle with a more marketable character. So you're going to have the green version with Tumnook, and you're going to have the pink version with the Badge Bunny, Badge Arcade Bunny. And eventually, down the road, if it's successful enough, we're going to get, you know, Rosy Rupee Land Gold with Wario.
Yeah, they're all money-grubbing, so it makes sense. Yeah, I like it.
I know.
I tell you what, though, what about when you started going about the colours, I started thinking about, you know, the second Tingle game that didn't even come out in Europe, where it's got, like, the pink Tingle,
yes,
you know, like the female Tingle or whatever. Like,
yeah,
I thought he was going down that road for a minute. That's
that's true. That's a whole line of amiibo that sure to please all the kids.
That's a well that we need to plug and just not let anyone drink out of because it's corrupted. John, what is your third prediction?
My third prediction is about Zelda Wii U.
You can say 2017.
No, my prediction is that Zelda Wii U will be teased at a Nintendo Direct coming up in March, and that it will be given an August release date with a full blowout at E3 2016.
Ah, that's early.
Yep. Now my thought there is that NX will come out and that they don't want Zelda competing with the NX launch.
Gotcha.
So
they're not viewing Zelda as an NX. You're not viewing Zelda as an NX port candidate either, then.
Not currently. I think that they may follow the trend of doing an HD remake of it, or in this case, a non-HD remake, but some sort of remastered version of it.
Game of the Year edition that comes out before Game of the Year's come out.
Of course.
Game of the Year edition that comes out in August. There we go. All right, my third prediction. Western media and consumers will continue to find Nintendo's mobile offerings confusing. However, they will be very successful in Japan, where tastes in mobile games differ substantially from the Japanese, or tastes in mobile applications differ substantially from their Western consumer counterparts. Generally speaking, Western media will find this frustrating, whereas Japanese investors will be overjoyed. As a caveat to that, Nintendo, if the numbers don't move the way Nintendo wants them to, Nintendo will engage in another buyback to get rid of those investors because they really don't like them anyway.
Yeah, but Western media always finds Nintendo's moves frustrating.
Yeah, well, I think mm-hmm. the Miitomo response that we saw was comical. I think people were just like, this is so stupid. What are they doing? It's like they're using Miis. Remember Miis? Miis were a fucking big deal.
Yeah, pretty much the most mass market thing Nintendo's ever done.
It's like, Miis make fucking sense here. It's like, yep. You need to think about this as a Japanese consumer because that's who it's for. So, I think they will continue to baffle people in the West, but they will make a lot more sense when viewed from a Japanese perspective. And I think they will be successful for them there. All right, does anybody have any rapid fires they want to do?
Oh, I got some rapid fires for you.
Hit me, John. Run through them.
Let's see. I think you will see an F-Zero game announced this year. And I think it will be from mobile, and I think it will be called F-Zero MX. And I also think that Square Enix will announce Final Fantasy VII Remake will be coming to Nintendo NX. Probably there will be an exclusivity period for PlayStation 4, but I think it will be coming to NX.
I think that seems logical, yeah. Is that what you got?
That's it.
Excellent. Greg, do you have any?
I do have one on the subject of anniversaries. So this year is going to be pretty big for 30th anniversaries. You've got Zelda, you got Metroid. But mine is a bit of a sad prediction. I think we're going to find out that the reason why Nintendo of America has been holding back Zero Mission from the Virtual Console is because that's all it's got planned for Metroid.
Oh, that's sad.
Notice I have no Metroid prediction this year. I've given up.
Give up.
It's over.
Give up the ghost.
Yep. Turn the lights off. Yeah. We're going home.
Guillaume, do you have any rapid fires?
Listener, Twitter user, at Astral Requiem, put me, like, help me with this one. Basically, Nintendo will use, for one of its mobile games, will actually use Xenoblade Chronicles as inspiration. Xenoblade Chronicles X, and they're going to partner with Majesco, and they're going to bring us the game Cooking Tatsu.
That license is available if you want it.
Absolutely.
If you know what I mean.
Oh, God. No.
Oh.
They could just use all of Lynn's voice samples, move it right into that game.
Oh. And then I had two rapid fires. One is that we will find that Nintendo has acquired talent from the mobile space for the Japanese mobile companies that have gone up and then come back down to fill out their development rosters. And that, too, Nintendo will essentially acquire some poor hapless dev or pub that is on the verge of bankruptcy this year because they'll need to fill out the development backlog for the NX. Because as we have seen, it takes a long-ass time to make a game. And then I guess the third one is that sort of rejuvenated by the love that they have been showing Monolith Soft progressively with each game they release. If you think back to their first one they released under Nintendo's ownership, it was not even released in North America. The second one was barely released in North America, and the third one became a tentpole release. I think they'll be much more interested in showing us every little thing they're working on, and they may tease us on something that's a smaller project from inside the company relatively soon.
Disaster 2.
Yeah, I hope so.
That's what you
Disaster 2 from mobile.
Steve Hewitt. Comes back from the dead.
Steve Hewitt dating sim in mobile. There, done.
the early Steve Hewitt, the early days.
There we go. All right, so that is our predictions for the year 2016. God help us. You can email us your predictions, or you can just critique ours and tell us how wrong we're going to be, or how much of a cop-out any of us did, at rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. This was a long one. It's good to be back, gentlemen. Welcome to 2016, 8 days ago, and I hope you all enjoyed the show. I think that's going to do it for us this week. Greg, what's our exit music this
week?
Well,
in the spirit of, you know, good feelings and optimism about the year ahead, I thought the just things that James finds particularly unpleasant. I thought the ideal outro music for this would be the vocal version of Pollyanna from the Mother soundtrack, with featuring a 14-year-old British choir girl singing ridiculously positive lyrics, which certainly are not my predictions for 2016. Let's put it that way.
Well, so I think that's perfectly. I agree. It's perfectly positive. Nintendo will continue to ignore that franchise for the good of humanity.
Some people have predicted Mother 3 will happen. I hope it does, but I don't share their confidence. But this British girl from 1989 does, or whatever. So enjoy that.
All right, and on that, we covered our big annual obligations until E3 rolls around in a few months. Why is that in a few months? God help us. And on that, that's the end of the show. All right, buddy.
Bye.
Happy New Year.
Bye-bye.